you're ready.
Sure. Before we get started, let's go ahead. You've done a good job of letting us know who's on the telephone line. Do we have other folks there in here?
Yes, we do. I'm going to get a list here. We'll go through. We have Reed Rasmussen's in the audience, Kurt Hohn, Lillian Anderson, staff, Mr. Mercer. They're going to bring me a list here just real soon.
Okay. With that, let's go ahead and begin. Once we start the meeting, you can go ahead and give us an idea of who has signed in, Commissioner Colbeck. But this is the ad hoc Public Utilities Commission meeting. It's Tuesday, June 12th at around 1:30 in the afternoon. Meeting being held in room 412 of the State Capitol Building. This meeting was called to address three questions with regards to the docket HP07-001, and that is the application of TransCanada for the Keystone Pipeline. The questions before the Commission today are, shall how the Commission proceed regarding the request for public release of documents filed by Keystone? Secondly, how shall the Commission grant intervention to requesting parties? And finally, third, how shall the Commission proceed regarding our public hearings toward the end of the month? My intention, if it's acceptable with my colleagues, would be to handle each of these questions in a separate manner, deal with one completely, then move to the second, deal with it completely, then move to the third. Unless there are any objections to that, that will kind of serve as a rough agenda for the questions today.
No, sir. No objections for me.
Great.
Fine, does it?
Okay, great. Commissioner Colbeck, we've got a sign-in sheet, and I think if you can let us know who has signed in, that would be helpful to those of us on the cell phone line.
Absolutely. As I spoke earlier, we have Mr. Kurt Hohn with Webb Water, Reed Rasmussen with Webb Water, Lillian Anderson, who is a landowner, Kevin Nordley.
Mecklen.
He is a landowner, Dave Huseman with the South Dakota DOT, Brett Kennecke representing Keystone, Jeff Roush representing Keystone, and Paul Lepskow with IWLLA. Those are the people that have signed in. I'll remind anybody who is sitting here, if they would like to address the commission today, to please grab this list and sign in. Is there anyone's name who has not signed in who would like to speak today? I hear none. So.
Great. Thanks very much, Mr. Colbeck. I appreciate your help. With that, let's proceed to the first question, and that is how to deal with the document filed confidential by Keystone. We've had a request filed by staff, and then earlier today, at least to my knowledge, earlier today, a motion by Keystone, or rather some additional information filed by Keystone. At this time, let's go ahead and turn to staff and make sure that I'm up to date with the filings that have come in today. Ms. Embacher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Van Bockeren for staff. There were some late filings today and some late communication between both Keystone and staff, and I believe we've come to some consensus regarding a great deal of that information. And so I believe some maybe preliminary motions staff would recommend on behalf of some motions maybe that the commissioners would like to make to eliminate those documents we've agreed upon. Staff would recommend, first of all, that those documents addressing other states be removed from this filing altogether. If any of the interested parties question what's happened in other states, certainly other state commissions would have that information, and I believe it just confuses the issue here in South Dakota, and in fact the commission does not have jurisdiction over those states. So staff would first recommend a preliminary motion to remove non-South Dakota information from this filing, and I would ask Mr. Kennecke to comment on that initial request by staff.
Keystone has no objection to that and, in fact, agrees with it. There's a substantial amount of information in Exhibits C and D relative to other states up and down the proposed route for the pipeline, and I agree that the filing of that information is... It's not helpful for our purposes here that I can see, and I would think it could be removed and should be done so.
At this time, it's probably worthwhile to hear from any interested parties who may want to comment on that. Commissioner Colbeck, I would just ask, you know, presumably anybody might have a comment would be there in peer, and so if you can sort of chair this portion of the public comment, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to comment on this particular motion? Mr. Kurt Hohn has indicated that he would.
You got to punch the button on those.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, we'll have other comments later about why TransCanada was allowed to file all this information, marked confidential in the first place, without any kind of public comment. It seems that as an oil company coming from out of country, a foreign company, that they might want to give the public some idea of what information could be viewed before they limit what we're allowed to see. It's not full disclosure. And to be a good neighbor in South Dakota, which is what they want to do, I believe, they say they want to do, I think full disclosure would be helpful. The other is the information on that's been filed in the state of North Dakota does affect the route through South Dakota. There is one alternative that was filed with the U.S. State Department earlier last year that showed an alternate route down the I-29 corridor. So depending on what they do in North Dakota could affect us here in South Dakota as to a final route. The other is a high-pressure oil pipeline. One of the big risks from my concern and my company's perspective is the effect of an oil leak from a crude oil pipeline, a high-pressure line at 14 to 1,700 PSI, will have on aquifers. And unfortunately, the Oaks Aquifer doesn't stop at the North Dakota line. It continues on into South Dakota. And I would imagine that there are similar aquifers on the North Dakota or the Nebraska border. So I don't think out of hand necessarily just waving this out and taking it out of the file is appropriate. TransCanada filed it in support of their application. The commission has had it on file since April. It would seem that the people of South Dakota might have an opportunity to get a look at it. So I think that you should not just do this completely out of hand and should take a look at each item, and you might even want to get some public comment. This information was filed by this company. It was part of the original application. Before it's removed, I think people have a right to look at it. For example, are they treating landowners in South Dakota differently than North Dakota or Iowa or Nebraska? Why did they not locate this pipe in Iowa originally? Did they run into resistance there, and what was the reason? We can learn what other states are doing to address this. We've never had an oil pipeline, a crude oil line of this size in our community, and I think limiting the information is really not in the public interest. Full disclosure would be in the public interest. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes.
State your name for the record, please.
Okay. My name is Kent Meckley. I'm a landowner from Marshall County. I want to echo the words that Kurt just stated. There's an old adage, now you see it, now you don't. Apparently this is going to be a, now you don't see it, now you don't see it. If this was important enough to file for the public record, then it should be important enough for everybody to view this now and to consider it. This secrecy thing that's going on is very upsetting. It should be upsetting to everybody in this state. If we can't have open government, open dealings, and we have nothing. Absolutely. This flying in under the radar and having this little meeting here and there, which are just little dog and pony shows that don't get to the truth, don't get to the facts, to me, flies in the face of our country, our government, our form. If this information was filed, if TransCanada, Keystone, thinks it was important enough to file, then let's get it open. Let's see what it is. Let's have the public take a look at this. And I'd appreciate it if the commission would understand that for us, too. Thank you.
Anyone else? Any comments from staff?
Yes, this is Caravan Bachran for staff again. Again, I would like to make it clear that nothing that the PUC has done, no decisions made by the PUC, have been done or ever will be done in secrecy. They'll all be very public, which is why we're here today. We're here to discuss this very issue in public. My understanding of why the out-of-state documents were filed in South Dakota really does not have anything to do with their application and what the commissioners have authority and jurisdiction to study in South Dakota and how this affects South Dakota as per statutory regulations. So, again, I mean, I understand the concerns, and I believe that other states would certainly have that information available for any of the concerned parties to examine and study in other states. I just will echo my recommendation that South Dakota commissioners have jurisdiction to examine those documents as they relate to our state, and my recommendation remains.
Mr. Kinnicky.
I've not changed my position, commissioners. The documents we're talking about relate to archaeological and wetlands and threatened and endangered species in other states. They're simply not part of the public discussion here in South Dakota. No matter what the interveners or proposed interveners might say, they won't ultimately have a bearing on how this thing's decided. I'm not going to pound the table one way or the other. I really don't care, but I don't know that we're helping provide the public with useful information by flooding them with documents related to other states and specific concerns to those other states. If people disagree with me, then they're welcome to do that. I don't see that myself.
All right. Any other staff comment? I'm sorry.
Mr. Colbeck, are there any other public comments? Folks in the public?
Nope, I don't believe so.
At this time, I would like to flesh out a few of the issues with some commissioner questions, if that's appropriate. The question was raised, Mr. Kinnicky, about the fact that these documents were filed, these other state documents. Why were they filed with the South Dakota DOC?
They were part of the entire filing, which was filed with the State Department, and it's my understanding that in order to be inclusive, we had filed those documents. They're extensive in nature and very state and location specific. And upon review, subsequent to staff's motion being filed last week, I think the thinking is between apparently staff who made the request and TransCanada is I don't know that this is helping the discourse in South Dakota by spreading it out that far. You're free to disagree with me. You've done it in the past and will in the future. But I don't see how it helps. Having seen the stuff myself, I don't see it.
Mr. Kinnicky, I understand the argument that these documents are not helpful to the South Dakota Commission. I understand the argument that they wouldn't be helpful to South Dakotans. How much information in those filings, though, would TransCanada view as confidential? Not helpful, perhaps, but how about confidential?
A substantial portion of it relates to the three major public interest confidentiality thrusts covered in my letter filed an hour or so ago, which I might add we brought copies of that along for dissemination to the people in the audience if they'd like to take a look at it. But we're talking about hundreds of pages of documentation relating to wetlands, which we think can be released, to endangered and threatened species sites that we don't think can or should be released, and in some limited cases to the high consequence areas along the pipeline. It's found in my letter. And as I said, Commissioner, I'm not going to pound the table one way or the other. I don't think that it's helpful. If someone else disagrees with me, I'm not going to pound the table and argue vehemently against that. That's simply our position.
Okay, thanks. I have a question for Mr. Holland. I understand you're not a part of the case yet, Mr. Holland, but if you want to answer a question. You mentioned that it would be helpful for folks in South Dakota to know what other states are doing. And the documents filed by TransCanada would not give us an indication what other states are doing. You know, for that to be the case, we need to monitor their regulatory process. Given that, do you think this information really needs to be a part of the South Dakota record?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I think it should for a number of reasons. One of them is effects on wetlands, for example. If you're a hunter or fisherman, but in particular a hunter, the migratory issue is important. And how this oil company, particularly this Canadian oil company, is going to treat wetlands as they cross them would affect you if you're a South Dakota hunter, duck and goose. Also, I think it's important to know, for example, why is it that the – it might be important for landowners to know why is it that TransCanada is avoiding federal fish and wildlife lands and moving the pipe onto private farmland. Is there a reason for that, and is that a pattern they follow all across the length of the project? This is a project that has to be consistent by state to state, and South Dakota would want to be treated the same, the landowners and citizens here be treated the same as other areas. There is nothing confidential about wetlands. If you flew the thing, you could see them. It's not like we're hiding some best fishing site, favorite fishing site. I mean, this is public information that was filed. It is significant. And if you're someone who's concerned in general about the pipeline, an oil line, a crude oil line through the middle of the Midwest, knowing how many wetlands are affected might be of interest to someone. It's the totality of the project, how it affects those who live here in the state and how it affects us in general. So it's, I think you can balance, if you can see what they're doing in other states, you can balance what's happening here and is it being handled the same way. So I would think, I didn't file it. They filed it initially. It was part of the record. It seems like it ought to be opened. Let the public decide if they're interested in what TransCanada is doing in Kansas or North Dakota. But it would open the record and make it available to the public. It'd be a great way to start this process.
Mr. Holland, I think there's some validity to your comments about, you know, comparing what they're doing in South Dakota with what they're doing in other states. But isn't there the possibility of allowing this other state information at this point would actually be doing a disservice because it might give people the idea that that's what's really going on in other states, when in fact, if we were to go check out their state regulatory websites, we might find that, in fact, there's been even a substantial change in the pipeline or, you know, the route across another state, or maybe they've done some additional mitigation because of what another state requested. To get really accurate information, should we be looking to those other state commissions as opposed to a snapshot in time filings with the South Dakota PUC?
Well, I think that really everything is a snapshot in time. In each of the states, they'll file with the various regulatory agencies, and those states will process them as they see fit. But nobody has the time, no public has the time, to travel to the various states and view how they're handling it in those areas. For example, the little bit of information you read in the news media, they're moving the pipeline to avoid drain tile in irrigated areas. Why is that? Well, if there's a leak, the drain tile take the oil right to the nearest waterway. That's interesting. Why is that such a concern in Nebraska, but we shouldn't worry about it here? I think that the information they have filed is not going to hurt TransCanada if it's open. He's saying they filed it with the United States State Department. It's just not current now. So whatever they filed with South Dakota, it would seem like residents should have a chance to look at it and make their own decision. And it may not be helpful or necessary, but it was and is part of the record. And so I don't see any good reason to eliminate it. It's hard to say why TransCanada would want to eliminate it unless they see it as a disadvantage for them in terms of how they proceed with right-of-way or permit approvals. I just think it's part of the record now. It ought to be complete. There should be a full disclosure, should it be opened, made available, and let the public and the taxpayers decide what they think of it, and then leave it at that. There should be nothing in that record that is secret or shouldn't be available.
Thanks, Mr. Hone.
Thank you.
Other commissioner questions? Commissioner Hansen, Commissioner Colbeck? Hello,
this is Commissioner Hansen. I do have some questions.
Yeah, go ahead and proceed.
Can you hear me all right?
Yep, we can hear you.
Thank you. This question is for Mr. Kennecke or for Ms. Van Bakker. I'm curious to know if these items have been filed in other states. For instance, I would assume that the EIAs that are pertinent to North Dakota have been filed in North Dakota. Is that the case?
Commissioner, this is Brett Kennecke. Thanks for the question. I have not seen the other states' filings and can't speak to that. All I can say is that the filing that was prepared here in South Dakota was South Dakota specific and based on the statutes we have. Jim White for TransCanada is on the line, and he might be able to further shed some light on that question, but I can't speak to it myself.
Commissioner, would you like me to address that?
If you would, thank you.
Okay. My name is Jim White. I'm at the Sidley Austin Law Firm, and I oversee the federal and state permitting for the project. With specific regard to North Dakota, I would say some of the information that we're discussing here today has been filed in North Dakota, not necessarily all of it. But I would note that all of the information we're talking about today has been filed with the U.S. State Department, and the U.S. State Department has a website on which they've posted a large portion of this information. I won't say all of it, but a significant amount of the multi-state information is currently posted on the Department of State's website.
So we have filings that pertain to North Dakota, and we have filings for the entire project that have been filed with the U.S. State Department. Is that correct?
That's correct.
This is Caravan Bachran, First Staff. I agree with that. I believe if an intervener has found information they believe pertinent, relevant, important for the commissioners to consider when making their decision, it certainly could be presented during the hearing process, in which we're just beginning the process. And ultimately, I think that important information could be shown.
Commissioner Brett Kennecke here, if I could just take a minute. It's past that, Commissioner, as you know, and those of us who are familiar with PUC practice know that parties to this case can observe information pursuant to the Commission's protective order or confidentiality agreement among the parties. So, really, I think there are a number of ways in which this information can be accessed, and whether the South Dakota PUC website becomes the repository for all of it, I guess you'll have to determine.
Thank you, Mr. Kennecke, and that was going to be my second avenue of questioning, and I appreciate Mr. Kennecke cutting to the quick on it, is that the interveners to these hearings, the interveners will be able to access certain information and introduce it if they wish, and I think that it's important in this particular discussion.
Commissioner Hansen?
Yes.
We're not sure if you have a bad line or we need you to speak up. I don't think you're coming through on the web is what we've been told.
Thank you. I'm getting, I
Yeah, that helps. We just want to make sure that it comes over the web. But, yeah, that what you were doing just right then, it seemed to help.
Thank you. That's all I have to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. Any other commissioner questions?
Yes, Commissioner Johnson, I have one question here, and I'm not sure. I think Mr. Kinnicky, do we know that these are available somewhere else? I know that Mr. White had stated some but not all, and you had stated some but not all. So is this the only place where it's totally available is in South Dakota?
You know, it might be helpful, Commissioner, in answering that question to address our filing made earlier today. Okay. We filed a document today expressing our intention to we're talking about Exhibits C and D contained on one DVD filed May 31st. And okay. We've got copies of the filing behind me. Jeff Rao has them.
Yeah. Could you pass those out, please?
Yes, sir.
We think that the Exhibit C and D was marked confidential right on the face of it in what can be characterized as a zealous attempt to safeguard the public's interest in keeping other information confidential. That confidential information is high-consequence area maps relative to pipelines and the places that they cross for security concerns from the Federal Department of Transportation, the National Pipeline Mapping System. Cultural resource location information, very specific information relative to cultural resources, which is commonly held confidential according to the State Office of Historic Preservation, the Department of State, and our agreements with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regarding our surveys of the location of threatened and endangered species. We have, I think, attempted to safeguard what other public bodies have declared to be the public interest in maintaining confidentiality with respect to those locations, and we did it very, very zealously. And upon review, we have come up with a number of documents contained in the filing, which we've made today, which we think can be released as of today, and we have committed to redacting or otherwise cleaning up some of the other large computer files so that the specific information required, we think, by these federal agencies to be safeguarded remains so. There is one question related to a pump station's line list, which we'd ask the commission to take special attention to before deciding that that should be public. But I would think that the bulk of our efforts today would result in almost all of the information that was previously marked confidential being released to the public. That said, I think what we'd end up with at the end of that process is a twinning up of what's been marked confidential here with what's marked confidential at that other source. To be specific to your question, Commissioner, that's what I think would happen if we followed that process. We expect and intend to do that, and we've obviously made a filing saying we're going to do that. And so I think that helps give context to your question. And then the specific answer is we'll merge those two such that the information is the same. I know with respect to the endangered species in other states that we don't have here, you know, I can't say I haven't seen what's filed elsewhere on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, Commissioner Colbeck?
I think Mr. Hone would like to say one last thing.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I have last fall looked at the information on file with the U.S. State Department. There are very large files, and our office has a mid-size server with capability of taking large documents. It's not easy to access that file. It's in Washington, D.C., in the State Department. You can't walk across the street and go in and look at the paper file. I talked to a landowner yesterday, a young farmer near Huron, who told me that he tried to access a map that is available now on your PUC website. He started it at 8 p.m., and when he got up at breakfast, it was open. And he said, if I would have saved it, it would have completely destroyed my computer. All of us use data and rely on data, and as the PUC does. You got a great website. Not everybody has a computer. A lot of these landowners are elderly. The record, you need to have a paper record as well as data. And it can't be in Washington, D.C. It's got to be here. TransCanada filed these documents. I don't know if they're all the same documents that were filed in Washington. This hearing is in South Dakota. This is where I and others who are concerned about this live. We'd like to access them in South Dakota and not wonder whether TransCanada has released everything or part of it or decided what we're going to see. Looking down the list, this June 12th letter, which I just saw a moment ago, what it really boils down to is TransCanada is going to decide what South Dakota sees. TransCanada is going to decide what South Dakota sees. And I don't think that's right. I think that as elected officials, and I know that you know the public, trust the public, they're going to look at this information and make a judgment. Nobody's interested in knowing where the bald eagles are located to go find one. It's the historic cultural preservation information. I deal with that in my water system. If I build a pipeline extension, state historic preservation walks the site, determines if there's anything historical there. Those reports don't tell you where to find the artifacts. They tell you that the report was done and that maybe having the public look at it might help to see if anything was missed. So I think by excluding, it's the wrong step right off the bat, day one, this restriction. And it's an attempt, I think, by TransCanada to limit the information and limit the view. And they, frankly, the public, so-called public meetings they've had in the areas, the ones I've attended were not public meetings. They handle people, and they're handling you if you agree to all of this. You need to open the documents. Let them see the light of day. Let people look at them. Frankly, there's probably nothing there that's going to shock anyone. It is the full file. Let people see it. Let the 60 people that have filed and requested to be parties of record see it. And any others that might have an interest, make it available here in your office, in Pierre, on the Internet, and also in the county auditor offices, as you've stated. And then let's move on with the hearing. I don't think it's in anybody's interest, especially TransCanada's, to limit. This is a maneuver that isn't really in the public interest. Looking down the list, it's several pages long, deciding what is and isn't released, I just find that offensive. It's not their choice, I don't think. Thank you for the time.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Cullen. And I just might mention, we had a couple of recent speakers in the last 10 minutes, I think, really addressing these broader issues. We are not going to be able to get our work done today if we cannot laser in on each question as it pops up. I mean, these are all important. They all deserve discussion. And once we resolve one, we can move on to the next. The discussion at hand right now is the joint motion by staff and the applicant to remove the other state information from the filing. That's what we're discussing. I'd ask all comments be directed toward that. Unless there are any other commissioner questions, at this point I would look to our general counsel to get the counsel's take on this question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think in one respect, definitely, I totally agree with Kurt Hone that with respect to that alternative pipeline route, I forget what it's called now. It's the alternative that cuts off to, I think, try to avoid maybe some of the wetlands and wildlife areas.
And you're talking about another state filing.
No, it's filed here. But it's some of that information would relate to another state. I mean, my assumption is, for example, just to clarify, that alternative route filing would stay in even under the proposal to remove out-of-state documents.
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Yes, I believe so. What essentially what we're talking about here, Commission Council, is I don't think we need to have, and you feel free to disagree with me. We don't need to have the multiple hundreds of pages on the Indiana bat locations in Missouri and Kansas on your server. You can disagree with me. I mean, I'm serious. I disagree with almost everything Kurt Holland just said about TransCanada trying to limit the information. I'm telling you, I'm here to give you everything except something that the federal or state government tells you I can't. I'm not making that up. That's those agencies doing that. But that's what we're talking about. Mr. Smith, it's not not about the alternative route. If we're talking about the Hecla Fish and Wildlife Service route, that's very pertinent to the discussion here in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. I agree.
And with respect to North Dakota information related to hydrologic effects, that would seem to me to have direct relevance here, potentially.
I don't think there's any information related to that in Exhibits C and D.
Well, I didn't see it either. I mean, that isn't what I see in there. The only thing, you know, I mean, honestly, I understand Kurt's point. I don't really care. I think if I understood the request, this particular suggestion, it was more as a matter of just cleaning things up so we don't have that enormous amount of utterly irrelevant stuff in there. I certainly don't want to look at it. I'm not going to look at what's in there related to the Illinois Biological Studies because it's not relevant to anything we can decide here or do anything about. On the other hand, you know, I other than just plainly just taking up space and confusing things and jumbling it up, I don't know that it hurts if people out there are going to believe some conspiracy is going on by removing it from the website and from our files. You know, I don't know that it's worth that. It may be better just to leave it there and avoid the accusation that we're hiding things from the public, which to me, with respect to Illinois and all that, is utterly nonsense, but it avoids that argument that can be made, and why take that risk, I guess is my point. It's been filed, you know, it just opens up the company and the commission to an accusation of covering something up, and I guess for me, it's in there now. Honestly, when I first looked at it, I'm like, what the heck are you guys doing, filing all this stuff from Illinois and all that? But now it's in there, and I think as we go along, frankly, as the process goes along, we'll very rapidly, I think everybody that's involved in this is very rapidly going to realize it's got nothing to do with South Dakota and what we're talking about. But, you know, again, that's kind of a little bit of a personal opinion there. Some of the information I do agree, though, I think with respect to pipeline location information regarding North Dakota, because that is, as far as I can see, and again, Kurt's in the water business, so maybe he knows what I don't know, but I was the head of DENR for a long time. So I will tell you that when you're up gradient in a watershed, the locations in North Dakota do have potential direct effects down here. I don't honestly think, I don't know if there's anything we can do jurisdictionally about it, but there's certainly a potential for locational effects in North Dakota too. And there's at least impacts that might result here from what happens in North Dakota.
Thanks very much, Mr. Smith. Yep. Appreciate it. Any other commissioner advisors have any comments?
I'm sorry, Mr. Kennick, you would like to respond. Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. I'd just like to briefly say all this information can be made available to interveners under a protective order or a confidentiality agreement. So there are mechanisms for this stuff to be made available to people who have chosen to intervene, which are readily apparent. Thank you.
And I wasn't addressing that confidentiality issue. I'm just addressing the out-of-state filing business right now. We'll turn to that confidentiality next.
If there are no other commissioner questions, I think we can progress to commissioner comments and perhaps action. Yeah, I would just note that I do think having all that information out there is confusing. I think it's counterproductive, and I think in some instances it could do a disservice to people by having them believe that that's actually what's going on in Illinois or Nebraska when other information that in some cases might be readily available might give them a clearer understanding of exactly what's going on in that state. With that being said, TransCanada did file the information, and until we can ascertain for certain that this information is readily available in other places like the State Department website or other state regulatory sites, I do think it's probably better to err on the side of having it available. And so I would be inclined to deny the joint motion. Other commissioner comments?
If I may, this is Commissioner Hansen. I agree wholeheartedly with the comments that were made by Consul Smith, and I appreciate the follow-up, Commissioner Johnson, Chairman Johnson, that you made. I do strongly believe that certainly if a person was having challenges downloading one map showing the state of South Dakota, I downloaded the same map. It took a period of time, even on a fast, sophisticated computer. I can't imagine how frustrating it would be for someone to wade through all of the other states' information as well. I think that if we do allow this information, which I'm inclined to do, on our server, then we need to have it labeled as plainly as we can that the which state it pertains to, so that people will be able to access South Dakota if they wish South Dakota, and it will not be under headings such as environmental information. I know it can be extremely difficult when you're just looking at docket numbers, and we need to make it as easy for people to find information as we possibly can. So I support what Chairman Johnson has stated. We certainly don't want people to think for a second that we are attempting to work to hide information from them. We do want this to be as open a process as it is legally possible to do without making it cumbersome for any of the parties. So with that, I will conclude my comments and look forward to a motion.
I agree. It's there now. We'll just leave it.
With that, I would go ahead and move to deny the joint motion. And second is not required. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. With that, I would again note that we have had a filing by the applicant this morning, or sometime today, that indicated some documents that they were willing to have released from confidential treatment. I would look to Mr. Kennecke to see if he has any comments other than what he submitted in writing with regard to that issue.
Thank you, Commissioner. Perhaps I'll use the letter as a template for those comments. I'm not sure how many people listening in or sitting in the audience have had a chance to look at them, but in any event, we filed on, I think, April 27th, an application which was fairly voluminous paper-wise, and along with that, we filed a DVD containing literally thousands of pages of information that we anticipated would be uploaded to the Commission website briefly thereafter, and of course, that didn't happen due to limitations of the either hardware or software. I can't say that I know which it was. But as the Commission staff and I well know, we worked over the remainder of May to put documents in place and carve them up so they would be more usable and able to be uploaded to the Commission website. And that resulted in the provision of the DVD labeled Exhibits C and D, which was labeled confidential on its face, and a number of the documents contained therein labeled confidential as well. So let's not lose sight of the fact that the application and exhibits A and B, which contain a large amount of information, have never been labeled confidential, either by mistake or otherwise. That's been TransCanada's intention all along. The documents on exhibit C and D are in almost complete measure related to matters which I've said have been deemed otherwise by other units of either federal or state government to be confidential in the public interest. It's not in TransCanada's interest to keep the locations where the Topeka Shiner has been found confidential. That's somebody else's worry, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's not in our interest specifically to keep the archaeological sites that have been found up and down the pipeline route confidential. That's the public's interest and has been deemed so by somebody else. And in respecting that, we were very zealous in putting together exhibits C and D, which were ultimately uploaded to the commission website less than 2 weeks ago. We have undergone, since staff's motion was filed, a rigorous examination of those documents, and I have filed my attachment to my letter, which is my own assessment, given the parameters which I understand, as I understand them to be, of the files which can be immediately released by my client TransCanada right here today and now, and which are on the Commission's website. I will state for the record that those files came right, the names of them came right off of the DVD, and don't come off and don't square up with the files as they're listed on the Commission's website, and I cannot explain why that is. But I took them off the DVD, which is the filing as I know it to be. Those larger files, which you, if you're looking at my attachment, Exhibit C, under 2 September 06, the first file, Biological 091506, contains within it some confidential information pursuant to those federal and state government parameters which I previously discussed. And we are committing to the public and to the commission and to the interveners that we are going to undergo a further rigorous examination of that specific document and any other which I've said in my document stay confidential to determine what exactly the single page within the perhaps hundreds which make up that file or pages which have to remain confidential pursuant to federal law or state law or agreement with the agencies that we've discussed. And we're able and willing to talk about those matters. But I just want to make abundantly clear that we're here today to commit to release an extraordinary amount of information off of Exhibit C and D and to go past that in the next few days to finish up that job and make sure that these documents are available for public inspection and use as the commission decides.
Thanks, Mr. Kemke. At this time, we would look toward staff for their comments.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Kara Van Bockeren for staff. First, staff, of course, does not object to all of the information that TransCanada would release to public inspection. Secondly, regarding the cultural and biological information, that possibly needs to be redacted. Staff doesn't see any harm in those documents remaining confidential until such a time that TransCanada can go through and redact particular locations, particular sites, those items they must protect based upon other agency order or request. Staff would recommend a motion to that same extent.
Thanks very much. At this time, perhaps let's flush out the issues a little bit better with some commissioner questions, then I think we can take some public comments once we square these issues away. Mr. Kennecke, Chairman Johnson here, you did notice that you are responding. You want to keep some of this information confidential because of promises made to other entities of government. Is there any way that the commission could verify that, or is there...
I've been seeking to put together a listing of those documents or other pieces of evidence. I'm not sure what they would be. I didn't make the agreements and don't know what they are. We certainly have references to state law or state law as it's intended to be on July 1st. And so we do have some of that, but I don't think we have a complete listing of that. I'll ask Jim White if he can add anything to that answer to that question.
Sure. Sorry about the feedback, but one suggestion, Mr. Sherman, might be we could provide contacts at the relevant agencies. For example, with respect to the high-consequence area material, we could provide a contact at the U.S. DOT, Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Administration, who I believe could and would confirm that the mapping information is to remain confidential. With respect to cultural resource location information, we could provide a contact at the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, who I would believe would confirm the need to keep site location confidential. And with respect to location of threatened and endangered species, I believe a contact at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service could and would confirm the need to keep locations of those species and habitat confidential.
Thank you very much. It occurs to me that as a preliminary matter before diving into all of those documents that TransCanada wants to continue to keep confidential, perhaps we should just focus on those documents that at this time both staff and TransCanada agree could be released from confidential treatment. Let's just focus on the low-hanging fruit, that which there appears to be some consensus developing. At this time, Commissioner Hanson-Kolbeck, if it's all right with you, perhaps we can ask if there are any public comment that would oppose making those documents, releasing them for confidentiality. Again, just focus on those documents that would be released according to staff and the applicant.
Anyone in the audience that opposes that would like to speak?
I think that came through, Commissioner.
Commissioner Johnson?
Yes.
Yeah, I asked if anyone had opposed, anyone would like to speak in opposition of that, and there was no one.
Great, thanks very much, Commissioner.
Just a second. You oppose?
I just have one comment.
Well,
it relates to opposing is that when you look at this gentleman's letter, which we just got a few minutes ago, my name is Kurt Owen, we're looking at abbreviations. It would help if we had your website printout that shows what is in the file that's marked confidential and not. Because under January 407, biological consultants, I guess it's on under Exhibit C, it says alternatives stay confidential. I think you really need to look closely at what is being kept out by approving this. I feel all of it ought to be open and made available. Just remove the confidential stamp. But they are leaving things in and that they're going to block. Landowner information should be available. Alternatives should be available. Pipeline risk assessment, emergency response plans should have never been blocked in the first place because that's the only way to tell if they're, if we're going to be affected. But I think you want to look at every one of those that they've said they're going to continue to make confidential. Again, why? It is a low-hanging fruit, Mr. Chairman, but why not all of it? Why not the whole tree? And it would simplify this process. There's nothing here. I mean, they have no letters from any federal agency that say, please not disclose this. Until you have those letters in hand, it seems like this is premature. They should release everything. And there are things in this letter. There's initial summary TOC, FWS, I mean, some of these things, I'm not even sure what they mean. So it seems like rather than deal with that at the time, why not deal with the whole tree? Why not either release the whole tree or study it and look at it and verify what is going to be left blocked?
Mr. Holt, thank you for your comments. I'll give some explanation as to why I suggested proceeding the way that I did. I think this does make it far more simple. Rather than try to talk about, hundreds or thousands of pages all at once, let's narrow the focus to exactly those documents that you addressed, those documents the TransCanada is still requesting confidential treatment of. That's what we all want to talk about. So let's remove all of the extraneous possibilities. Let's take those off the table. Let's make sure that today those documents can be made available to the public, regardless of whatever else we might decide today. But certainly, if Commissioner Hanson and Commissioner Kolbeck believe there are efficiencies to be gained with another approach, I'm certainly happy to pursue another approach.
No, Commissioner, I think that's the correct way to go about it.
I appreciate your comments. Yes, I agree. This is Commissioner Hanson.
A question for Ms. Van Bakkeren. And I realize that there were some time pressures on all parties to the case and getting ready for today's meeting. But that being said, I do share some of the concerns that have been mentioned about not all the documents matching up. Does Commission staff feel confident that if the Commission were to vote on a motion at this time to release all of those consent
This is Kara for staff. I would need to communicate more with those that manage our website and the Capital Technology Center. However, no, I don't feel confident at this point that those documents would be easily accessible and we could find them quickly. I think it would take tomorrow for us here in the office to identify those documents and make them easy, obvious, apparent to all of those visiting our website. But we could, well, it'll, I mean, if the commissioners so vote, it'll be done tomorrow.
Thanks very much, Ms. Enbacher. You know, I am, my pause is because I am trying to figure out exactly how to proceed, because I do think there are some complications, because we are dealing with, you know, two different formats here about what we're naming documents.
Staff does have a suggestion, Commissioner, if I may speak.
Oh, please.
I definitely agree with the first direction you were taking this, in that staff would certainly recommend that we just have a vote and get all of that TransCanada is consenting to. They agree it's public. Let's just first vote and remove all of the question regarding those documents. Let's get them out there. And with such a vote, Commission staff would get on that immediately, and we would have all of those documents available as quickly as possible. I think the second question, then, is the information that is questionably, there may be some redaction necessary. With some day's time, staff would be able to contact those various government agencies. Staff would be able to research TransCanada's assertion, and TransCanada has committed to redacting those documents in such a way that many of them could possibly be out there for the public. And staff would certainly undertake that research with vigor and get that done quickly. So that would be my recommendation. I do not think that there is any harm to those interested parties in these documents remaining confidential for those days' time it would take to do such research. I don't think there's harm in that. These documents, as Mr. Kennecke has expressed, address cultural endangered species type of evidence and type of documents. I don't believe that these documents remaining confidential for some days' time would affect the landowners and interested parties' ability to represent themselves at the upcoming June public meetings.
Okay. Ms. Embarkin, any concerns, I mean, if the commission were to act as you outlined, any concerns that staff may not be able to match up with TransCanada what they're calling a document, what we're calling the document?
No, I do not have, I'm not concerned about that, in that we have a disk we've been working off of in our recent communications, TransCanada and staff. We have a disk so we can look at those same documents. If need be, we can redesign that part of our website. If need be, to make it very clear, we can redesign how we put that information out to the public. So I believe we can, as has already been expressed, Exhibit A and B are of no question. So that's out there, and that can stay there. We don't need to mess with that. We're looking at simply two exhibits, Exhibit C and D, and Mr. Kennecke and TransCanada and staff are working off of a CD in our recent communications, and I believe we can get that up on the website. First of all, those documents that could possibly be released immediately today, we can get those out. We can identify those. We can pull them off that disk. And those that possibly need to be redacted, I believe we can pull those off the disk.
Okay. But Commissioner Colbeck, if you could, I guess I would ask one more time to see if anybody opposes making the consensus documents available to the public or remove that confidential treatment. I would just see if anybody on the phone line or in person there in Pierre wants to oppose that approach.
Sure. Anyone on the line? Anyone in the room? I hear none, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks very much, Commissioner Colbeck. With that, I would move that in the letter filed with this commission by Mr. Kennecke on June 12th, and that is that the attachment lists those documents that can be released from confidential treatment, that the commission allows the release of those documents. Motion has been made. There is no second is required. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
through each of those, line by line on those that TransCanada would like to keep confidential and that I'd like to get there. And I think in many cases by the title listed on the June 12th letter, it will be obvious what rationale TransCanada is using for requesting confidential treatment. But I'd like to move line by line so we're all clear as to why that particular document would be should be kept, or at least it's being argued by TransCanada, should be kept confidential. First, let's pause and see if anybody has a better idea on how to proceed.
Commissioner, this is Brett Kennecke.
Yes, go ahead.
I will tell you that we're talking about thousands of pages and that I have committed to releasing similar thousands of pages and only wish to redact a very few of those thousands. I'm not sure that what you're proposing is going to work. I'm more than willing to go there with you if you say that's where we got to go. But I'm really telling you that what I'm talking about is in each of those files that were on that disk, they were large files, multiple pages. There might only be one or two references out of hundreds that required me to tell you that until we could redact it, that entire file had to stay confidential given the time constraints.
Well, and I think some of them, Mr. Kennecke, are going to be pretty obvious. I mean, presumably, under the 2nd of September 06, line 1 says, biological stays confidential. I mean, presumably you'll be using, one of your three rationales outlined in your letter. I suspect the location of threatened and endangered species to request that maintain confidential treatment at least for a while. But I think some of them probably are not quite so evident.
I think, Commissioner, I'm not disagreeing with you so much as I'm pointing out that in those hundreds of pages, I don't know that we can pinpoint exactly what caused that designation for that particular file. That might take 5 or 10 minutes to find the page or two within that.
I apologize. If I made it sound like that's what I was interested in doing, I'm not. I'm just looking for the broad legal rationale that you all are using to try to keep this confidential, at least for some amount of time. I'm certainly not looking for a line-by-line, blow-by-blow at this point.
I apologize if I ascribed that to you. That's what I thought you were asking me for. If you'd like me to start then, Commissioner, I'll give it a try and we can see if it's working.
Well, let's just pause and see if Ms. Van Bakkeren or Mr. Smith or either of the commissioners have a better approach.
This is John Smith, Commission Counsel. I mean, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to do, maybe to generally go through these particular files. The fact is, I think what I've heard the company just say is they're going to make a commitment to burrow into this with into the minutiae and attempt to get it down to where only the things that either state law or state policy or federal law or policy require confidential treatment of, that all the rest of it will be released. And again, it's been emphasized over and over again that when we get to that point, the commission, pursuant to protective order, can allow access to any of that stuff by parties. But there's a reason, and I'll just tell you guys this. I mean, on July 1st, for example, a law is going to go into effect here in South Dakota that will require all cultural and gravesite type of information to be kept confidential. And there's a reason for that. It's because not everybody out there is a well-meaning participant in that this proceeding. My family happened to own one of those farms that had a bunch of Indian relic sites on it. And believe me, there's thieves out there. And there's a reason you don't necessarily want every Tom, Dick, and Harry to know where every Native American gravesite is in this world. I mean, there are some of these things aren't sinister. They're for a good reason. And we don't want to err on the side of doing that. You know, I mean, that's just common sense.
And Mr. Smith, that's what I'm, and I don't necessarily want to get into a back and forth here, but I mean, two comments. Number one, that's what I'm trying to get to. I don't have the same kind of personal interaction and understanding with, sensitive cultural sites as you have. And so I thought we could, discuss a little bit why, in general, those documents, whether it's state law that may be in effect next month or whether it's, existing an agreement with the federal government or some reason I mean, we need some reason why these documents should be confidential, even if it's for, you know, just a little bit longer. And then, I mean, I would also note a number of people have mentioned a protective order, and I do think a protective order is an appropriate mechanism to use when a document has a legal rationale for being confidential. I don't think it is any sort of a rationale for, you know, keeping something confidential that doesn't have as strong a legal justification. I know nobody's suggesting that, but I just want to make that clear that I think it's really only a mechanism that helps intervene and not interested citizens.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to be unduly strident in my comments here. I just think, you know, once, as you well know, once you've released things out into the public domain, you don't bring them back. So I think we just, you know, and I agree with that. And I think what you're asking, Mr. Kenneke, then, is that you just kind of generally go through, maybe, Brett, and go through with each of these categories on a general level and explain. And maybe Mr. White on the phone, you might chime in and give us your take as to why you would like some additional time to carefully screen these to make sure we're not releasing things that could do damage to public resources.
Sure. And I've actually made some notes on the document as the discussion was going forward. And if it's helpful, I could quickly sort of go line by line and indicate what the rationale is for each item. That'd be helpful.
This is Commissioner Johnson. And John Smith, you mentioned categories, and I think that's probably a better place to start than where I suggest, and that is Mr. Kenneke did a good job on page 2 of his letter of explaining the areas where Keystone would like to maintain confidentiality. Perhaps that's the best place to start explaining in a general way those three categories.
Do you want to proceed then, Brett and Mr. White, and do that?
Jim, go ahead and
Sure. I want to be sure whether we want to talk about which category applies to each of the items or have a general discussion of the categories themselves.
Hey, this is Commissioner Johnson. I'd like a discussion of the categories. For instance, I'm pretty sure I know what high consequence areas are.
Okay.
But certainly filling in those details I think would be helpful.
So the majority of the high consequence areas as defined in the DOT regs are the so-called unusually sensitive areas, and those are primarily drinking water sources. So they would be, for example, the water intake for a community water system, a source water protection area, and then there are also ecological resources that qualify under the HCA designation, and those would be areas containing critically imperiled species, multi-species assemblage areas, migratory water bird concentration areas, just generally areas that are deemed by the Department of Transportation to be unusually sensitive areas, and they would fall under the high consequence area designation. So the concern here on the DOT's part is that this detailed mapping information, which provides the location of high consequence areas, not be generally available to the public. And this was a post-9/11 concern that the DOT recognized, and so they put additional restrictions on access to this mapping material. And generally, it's only made available to agencies and also to pipeline operators, and it's made available on a password-restricted basis. And so the company accesses that information under the understanding that they will maintain its confidentiality for those reasons.
Can I ask you a question about that, Mr. White?
Yes.
Is there a DOT regulation site you could give us to look at?
Is it
in the letter? Maybe you've got it in the letter.
There's actually a DOT website which talks about this national pipeline mapping system, and I believe that website would reflect the fact that it's deemed to be sensitive on a national security basis. Have that handy.
Okay.
I don't, Mr. Smith, but I could provide that to you.
I think I note that in the letter they appear to be there, and I regret to say I just got the letter
sure.
10 minutes before the hearing, too, so I apologize. I hadn't seen that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so the second category is the cultural resource location information. And essentially what happens under the National Historic Preservation Act, the permitting agency, which in this case is the Department of State, has an obligation to consider the impact of the project on so-called eligible sites under the National Register of Historic Places. And in the practical reality, the applicant conducts those surveys on behalf of the agency. And the agency has the authority under the regulations of the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation to deem the location, character, and ownership of historic properties to be withheld from public disclosure. So because the applicant is collecting that information on behalf of the agency, the applicant maintains that information as confidential. Because were it to be disclosed, we would effectively be preempting the agency from its right to deem that material to be confidential. And it's typically maintained confidential also consistent with the desires of the state historic preservation offices, and generally for the reasons that Mr. Smith indicated, that making that information publicly available could have consequences to the resources.
And then Commissioner Johnson here. I mean, does the applicant do that as a courtesy to the federal agency or under some sort of a formal agreement with them?
It's by direction of the agency. The agency typically doesn't have resources to send teams out to survey hundreds of miles of pipeline right away. So they rely on the applicant, and then both the State Historic Preservation Office and the Department of State review those surveys and comment on them and require them to be adjusted if not found to be adequate.
Other questions on Category 2? Okay, go ahead, proceed.
Can I ask one, and maybe this will be preempted by the new statute that goes in on July 1st, but are some of these, the two discretionary ones, and I don't know if the DOT, whatever they are, high consequence areas are, but with respect to these other ones where they're by agreement, I'm assuming that as you go through and you reach some results, does it happen then that the agency will look at those results and afterwards then determine that the kind of highly sensitive, highly valuable resources don't exist, and then they agree to release those?
Well, the agency will look at the results, and for example, if the results say there are 17 sites identified which qualify for listing, those sites could be publicly listed. On the other hand, the agency may decide that the location of a specific site ought to be deemed and held withheld from public disclosure, and that's their prerogative. So, while some of that information becomes public at the end of the process, not all of it does, and we're simply, acting as a prudent applicant and not preempting the agency from making that decision.
So at some point, I'm assuming that we may have a follow-on proceeding to this after we've given the applicant a chance here to scrutinize the materials a little more thoroughly. Would it be prudent for us to request the applicable state and federal officers to be here to offer testimony concerning these materials?
I'm not sure at which point in the process you'd be referring.
Well, I'm assuming we'll have a follow-on here at some point related to after, assuming, and I don't know what they're going to do today, but if they were to accept Mr. Kennecke's offer and give them some time to further attempt to really isolate down to what really is the potentially damageable material here. I tend to agree, having looked through most of this stuff, and I think we're going to end up with 99.999% of everything here being public. But I think what you're asking for is time. But at that point in time, would it be advisable to have officials from the State Historical Preservation Office, et cetera, here to discuss these issues and why it's important and what, Mr. Kennick, you don't think that's a good idea?
We don't oppose that, no. That's perfectly fine. If you want us to call them as witnesses, we can do that, or staff.
Or we could ask them to provide an affidavit or participate in some other way to confirm that it's their view that this information ought not to be made publicly available, at least at this time.
I think Mr. Kennecke did make the point, and I think it's an important one, that the actual interest being asserted here isn't their interest. TransCanada's not in the artifact business or whatever. It's the interest you're asserting is an interest of the government, either the state or at the federal level, and maybe the government actually ought to have them here to speak for themselves. I don't know.
I think that's a very good point. I don't want to say we're caught in the middle, but it kind of seems like we're caught in the middle here at the PUC, because we'd like to have as much information out there as we can, but if we're endangering something that we obviously don't know another agency's jurisdiction, we don't want to be stepping on their feet either.
Right. And in a sense, I guess we're caught in the middle as well. I mean, there is, as was just noted, there's no interest on TransCanada's part whether these sites are made public or not, but we're simply at this point protecting what we view to be the government agency's right to deem this material to be confidential.
I guess my question is, what are the ramifications if the commission was to decide, say, high consequence areas were to be released? Maybe council staff could give us what the consequences to the PUC commission or the commission would be if we were to say yes, we want this information released.
Well, I haven't looked at those. I haven't looked at the regulations and the law that they implement. And I honestly, Commissioner Colbeck, right off, I can't tell you right now. That's why, you know, again, I'm all for as public a disclosure as we could possibly make. But on the other hand, I'm not real hot on winding up in a federal Homeland Security lawsuit of some type or another either. If we got to go another week or so, I'd rather err on the side of caution on some of that stuff. And again, with all due respect, I know we do want a complete disclosure, but again, I certainly would want to take a look at this.
That's all from me, Mr. Johnson. Sorry to get off track there a little bit.
No, I think that's we need to have this discussion pop up as he's explaining the category, certainly. If there's another question, we would certainly take it. Otherwise, let's proceed to the explanation of Category 3.
I have one more question, I guess. How long, Mr. Kaneki, are you looking for? As far as we're going through these categories, do you see one category taking longer than cultural location, or do you figure cultural location is a lock? There's no way we're going to get that released, or how much more time, since we have these meetings coming up next week, time's of the essence. We need people to read this. We need people to understand this, if we can get it out to them.
No longer than Friday of this week.
And our meetings are on next Monday, Tuesday, correct?
No, a week.
A week from. Okay.
Almost.
All right. Thank you. That's all I have. If you could...
Sure. Move to issue number 3. Issue number 3 is similar to issue number 2. It falls under the Endangered Species Act. Again, the government agency, the State Department in this case, is required to consider the impact of the project on threatened endangered species and their habitats. And again, surveys are conducted by the applicant at the behest of the agency. And the applicant then identifies, for example, the location of, let's say, raptor nests, which is a relevant issue on this project. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which oversees the ESA, requests that, again, the locations of threatened and endangered species, such as raptor nests, not be publicly disclosed, simply to protect the species from poaching and other activities. And that's the reason that we maintain that information as confidential.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Any questions with regarding to that third category?
Yes, you wouldn't happen to – this is Commissioner Colbeck. I'm sorry, Mr. Wade. You wouldn't happen to know maybe another permitting. Have you ever released this, or has this never been released? Because I kind of – I've seen this in other places. I should say it that way.
Well, when you say this, you mean the
– some sort of endangered species, or actually more of the wildlife nature, and I use that in a very broad sense. I don't.
Sure.
I'm not exactly pertaining to a specific species, but
sure.
I know that endangered species list. Everyone should know what animals are on the endangered species list.
There is absolutely voluminous information on wildlife species and endangered species in the material that would be releasable. It's simply the specific location of habitat for threatened endangered for individuals in those species and habitat for those species that is under the claim of confidentiality. So it's a it's a relatively small part of the threatened and endangered species analysis.
Okay, so we're more concerned about people finding a nest and camping out underneath it and waiting for a bald eagle to come.
That's exactly what we're concerned about.
Okay, thank you.
Let's, any other questions? Categories? An issue that I'd like to have addressed just a bit, Mr. Kennecke or anybody on TransCanada, this pump station line list. Talk a little bit about that information and what sort of treatment you're requesting for that.
The pump station line list, Commissioner, I'll attempt to call it up on my computer here at the table so I can speak more fully about it, but it contained, as I recall, the names, addresses, and telephone numbers of a number of people up and down. Here, in just a minute, I'll pull it up. Up and down the pipeline, 52 pages of information, people's homes, cell, work, phone numbers, and related to the tracts of land which they either control or own. And that seems to me to be something that needs to be fully discussed before anyone decides to make that information public. That's as to exactly what it relates, whether it's the just to the pump stations or the line in total, I couldn't say. I didn't compile the list, but as I was conducting my review, I don't want my cell phone number out to the world. And, in fact, when I find out who gave it to John Smith last Thursday, I'm going to take a retribution on them. But in any event, that's something that you need to find out and know that's in there and direct to be made public before we would take that step ourselves.
What does the line underneath that mean, Mr. Kennecke? The two PDF files may be released.
There were two PDF files which were a larger part of the 2 September 06 subcategory on the disk. One is entitled Keystone Description Update September 15th Filing, and another one is entitled Keystone Project Description Update September 15th Filing, and neither of those files under my review contained information that I thought required them to be confidential.
Okay.
And as you can see by the similar descriptions of the files, if I'd have written them out there, it would have been less helpful rather than more as I was going down the list.
Okay. Are there any documents that you list in your attachment that, because the pump station line list would have been an example of one of them, are there any others that you're requesting continued confidential treatment for some reason other than the three listed in your letter?
No.
Okay. Any other questions for Kennecke or staff regarding the attachment and letters?
I have just one little mini question, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, please go ahead.
This is John Smith. Just on our website, and I think, again, you pointed out the fact that our website portrayal of the documents doesn't match up precisely with your disk. I think the reason for that, and the executive director's here and the assistant executive director, and they deal with that, not me, but I think the reason is we try to put the information on there in a way so that it's identifiable, you know, and comprehensible to an ordinary human being who isn't going to know what your disk designations mean. And I think that's the reason for it. I know just like something like, I know North Dakota route map, for example, is on there. That's confidential. I mean, that's, I don't see it on your Exhibit C list of things. Maybe it's included in something, but I mean that, you don't want that to be confidential, right?
But to the extent that I know mm-hmm. what it is, as long as it doesn't contain any information, as the staff, you know, I don't know what the staff chose to name North Dakota Route Map confidential, but as long as it doesn't contain any information that we've discussed in the last 10 or 15 minutes, we have no objection to it being put out there.
Okay. It's just, I looked at it, it's just a map of the route.
Ms. Van Buckren?
This is Kara for staff. I suggest that we take Exhibit C and D off of the Internet as it's currently on, and we redo it in such a way that it will mesh with the disk so we can clearly identify exactly what documents we're talking about. Because like I said, Exhibit A and B aren't at issue here, so that can stay as it is. It's just Exhibit C and D that I think should be removed, and we simply start over with now the results of today's hearing.
Ms. Van Bakker and Commissioner Johnson here, and my only concern with that is I actually find it far easier to figure out what documents are being referred to as to how we formatted our website than as opposed to on the attachment.
And this is Kara again. I believe we could maybe label the folders or the documents in such a way as they're on the disk that the disk and our website will mesh, yet we'll still have titles comprehensible to normal human beings, as Mr. Smith called them.
At some point here, I do think we should hear from those in the public interested parties about this. Before we get there, let's see if there are any other questions, commissioner or advisor questions, any specific documents and why they are being, they deserve a confidential treatment according to TransCanada.
Mr. Chairman, this is Gary Hansen.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I have a number of comments, not so much questions, so I'll wait until after the public has an opportunity. Thank you.
And if you think your comments might spark questions in some of us, please feel free to go now or hold your comments here, whatever you prefer.
Well, I will. I hesitate ahead of time. I'd like to hear what the public has to say, but maybe this will prime the pump, give an opportunity for folks to make comments. I think that all three of the commissioners agree that paramount to this entire process is the public's right to know, and it's the highest priority. I am a bit frustrated. There's sort of a catch-22 that we are in, with agencies requesting information and then telling the applicant that it needs to be confidential information. And there certainly is some sincerity and need for confidentiality, as has been pointed out by Mr. Smith, for instance, when he commented on historic preservation. I know that that's one of the biggest challenges along the Missouri River when the water recedes, people are attempting to pollute. There's a lot of people that attempt to pollute the American Indian sites. And that's a genuine concern, certainly. But we get into some of these things where there's information that I think the public is beneficial for the public to know. And for a public agency to request the information and then place that burden on the applicant and say, okay, now the applicant has to make this confidential, I think is counterproductive to what we want to accomplish. At what extent, for instance, Raptor, I imagine there are some despicable people in this world who would want to go out for some reason, as Commissioner Colbeck stated, camp beneath the Raptor and do them harm or something of that nature. But to say that information on a variety of things should be kept confidential is like saying that, well, we shouldn't tell the citizens where the convenience stores are or the banks because somebody might go and rob them. And, you know, there is a point at which we have to say what we have a responsibility to the public to let them know what is taking place. And when other agencies just simply request that something be placed in confidentiality, I think we have to, personally, I disregard those. I think that there needs to be an actual statute. And in the absence of a statute that requires it to be, the information to be confidential, I personally believe that it should not be confidential. And that's where I'm coming from on the discussion and where my goal will fall. I'm sensitive to some of the challenges, but I think it needs to go
comments are well taken, at least by me, Commissioner Hanson, and I would, and I think particularly at the end there, you hit on the important point, which isn't, do we believe as individuals that particular pieces of information should be made available to the public? That is an important question, but the question that's got to be asked beforehand is, are there legal obligations to not release it to the public? Even if I think something should be made available, if it would be in violation of federal rule statute or state rule or statute, that limits my ability to act as I want to, certainly.
Exactly.
Questions about particular documents or particular rationales offered by the applicants?
Yes, I have a question. This is Commissioner Kolbeck. Mr. Kaneki, under Exhibit C, you have supplemental material. You have alternatives, stay confidential. Is that alternative routes?
Are you
pipe, mainline pipeline route alternative?
Are you looking under 4 January 07, Commissioner?
Yes, I am.
Yes. I think if the question is, does that pertain to routes, it does, and it looks to me upon a very brief review of it like the majority, if not all, of that could be declassified. I hate to elevate this proceeding any farther, but I don't see anything that can't be taken out of that. That's a very off-the-cuff cursory review, but the short answer to your question is yes, and the long answer is I think it'll be ultimately made available.
That isn't there because there are some things in there that do pertain to South Dakota that I think should be.
I agree.
Non-confidential.
I agree, and I will make a particular note to make sure that anything that in that file that's not confidential, we provide a very broad rationale for and allow you to make a decision. Does that work for you?
Yes. Again, when are these? We have a commitment for Friday.
We do.
Okay. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Commissioner Kolbeck. You know, I think, and I'll just sort of think out loud here a little bit, and sort of mention what I'm thinking, and then we can get some public reaction or comment. My thought, we should really view this as a two-step process, and I think Mr. Kaneki has tried to articulate that. The first step we've already taken, and that is the documents that staff is going to endeavor to get, online and available to the public as soon as possible. The second step really is this question about documents that, for some legal reason, in dealing with the federal government, may be necessary to have confidential treatment. And during that second step, I mean, I do think it's important to note that I think redaction is the right approach, rather than keeping whole documents confidential. I think redacting the highly sensitive information so that people can at least see what the document's getting at. I mean, and then the public can raise additional concerns, which is, well, this sentence here is redacted. We believe that it points to something we need to know. We'd like to request a commission hearing. And I think that's important. The more they can see on these documents, the more they can understand what the redacted information is getting at. I wonder, if the commission moves forward as requested by TransCanada, there shouldn't be some meeting next week where we review the new information submitted by TransCanada on Friday and give individuals an opportunity to raise concerns about how that confidential information was made available.
I agree, Commissioner Johnson. I would imagine that more questions are going to be raised after Friday. Hopefully 99.9% will be answered, but we need to provide an avenue for the public to ask those questions. I agree. Next week we should maybe look into another date.
Well, I'm also thinking that we would request, that staff work with the applicant to get, and I don't know, maybe letters will suffice from the federal agencies. Affidavits are certainly better. I don't need anybody to come to peer. I don't need the federal government to fly somebody in. If I can get an affidavit where they're explaining why they think confidential treatment is important and, in fact, is consistent with federal law, that's going to go a long way to easing my concern about redaction of information in these documents. So I'm thinking, you know, a motion be made to instruct, you know, staff and the applicant to get that information as well.
Question.
Ms. Van Bockeren, I'm sorry. Commissioner Hansen, was that you?
Yes, I was just saying I concur with those statements.
Ms. Van Bockeren?
This is Kara Van Bockeren, just with a question. Are commissioners looking for an affidavit from such agencies regarding the information that will be redacted and why it's redacted, or did you want more general statements from such agencies regarding, you know, the three points as we just went through?
I say this is Commissioner Johnson. And initially, I think a general statement is appropriate. I mean, I you know, we've been told that there are federal statutes that require this. You know, I'm neither an attorney nor an expert in many of these issue areas. And so I think some verification from the federal government that that is indeed their understanding of the law would be helpful. And then I think as the redacted documents, you know, are made available to the public, then commission staff and commissioners and the public can raise some concerns about specific sentences or phrases or paragraphs and what the legal rationale would be for them to be redacted if we get to that point. It may be that the redacted documents meet everyone's needs to make sure they have adequate information about this project. That's my take. Commissioners Hansen and Kolbeck may have a different one, certainly.
No, I agree with you, Commissioner Hansen. Or Johnson.
I agree.
Okay, and it may be that, I mean, it's likely we would not want to schedule a meeting for next week at this point. I mean, I think we should give the applicant an opportunity to file the documents that they've mentioned they're going to file on Friday, and then we can give all of the interested individuals, all of the interveners, all of the commission staff an opportunity to look at these new filings, if that's the direction we go. But again, who knows? Unless somebody has some other initial comments, I do think it's probably appropriate at this time to look toward any public comment from interested parties we might have. Before we do that, Ms. Embacher, Mr. Kennecke, anything else?
Yeah, Cherry, before I forget, how are you doing? Okay. Just our court reporter, we needed to make sure she wasn't getting cramps over there. We've been at this a little while. Ms. Van Bockeren.
This is Kara for staff. Just a quick comment that we'll certainly need to have enough time in between TransCanada's filing to not only get that information up on the website, but to get the release information out to the county offices so all those that don't have access to the website can look at that information and have enough time to raise concerns if they exist.
Well, and it's the understanding of some of those logistics that made me decide that rather than rush to a meeting next week, we want to make sure that we get the appropriate information out to people, give people time to evaluate what has been, you know, refiled. And, you know, the commission does have a year to make this decision. We want to make sure we get accurate information out as soon as possible. We also want to make sure that we don't do something wrong by rushing ahead when this is going to be a deliberate process. It's going to take lots of time from all of us, and it's certainly not going to be resolved by the end of June. This project is going to – lots of work yet to come. Mr. Kennecke, anything else before we open it up to public comment?
No, Commissioner, thank you.
Yep. All right. Commissioner Kolbeck, again, I would ask with regard to the public comment portion if you could assume the chairmanship and moderate and work on that end, please.
Absolutely. Okay. We'll take public comment from the audience now. Anyone? Mr. Hone.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, first of all, I'd like to thank the chairman for extending the time which people can make the determination as to whether they want to be a party of record. Given some of the confusion, I think that'll be helpful. It's difficult, as you can imagine, for average South Dakotan busy with their own life trying to figure out whether they have an interest in this hearing with the issue of records and information being where it is at this point. So there may be more people that have an interest once they are aware of what's in the record and what's available. I'd like to comment on three items. The high consequence areas issue does not only deal with utilities and water systems. It also deals with things like, under federal law, as far as I've read, schools, public parks, public places. Should an oil line be located near a Hutterite school, as its proposal is near Britain? Should it be near a park that's frequented by campers? In Carlsbad, New Mexico, that was a bad situation. 12 people died in an explosion. It's high-sensitive and high-consequence areas are not just utilities, and they're not just water. There are other issues, like where people congregate. Is it a good idea to have something in that kind of an area? Now, the issue of high-consequence areas, the issue for the public is, how do we know you've identified them if we can't see them? I'll give you an example. In my own business, when I looked at the information filed with the federal government, State Department, I was surprised to see that the TransCanada documents made no mention of the 8 rural water systems that this pipeline would cross, which virtually cover the eastern part of this route, eastern South Dakota. That's highly consequential, drinking water. We didn't even show up. And so until we submitted a map to them, I don't know if they knew we existed. That's why the public does need to know what they're telling you is high consequence. Because if it's not complete, you're not getting the full picture before you make your decision. Example two, in the area of water, the BDM Rural Water System, a sister project to Webb that covers the area from Britain all the way to Summit and Sisseton, relies on groundwater that is directly under the route of this pipeline. Now, I'm not speaking for them, but if you were to identify a high consequence area, that area needs drinking water, they rely on that system, I would think that would be on the list. I have no way of knowing, and neither do they, until you see that record. As to the things like risk assessment, that tells you what kind of risk you're going to have by putting this through your community. The volume studies tell you whether you're going to, how they're going to track for leaks. The SHPO information, the State Historic Preservation Office in South Dakota, actually has a very aggressive effort. When we build water lines, we have to pay people to walk the line, look for sensitive areas. They don't report to Webb. They report to the state. I get a summary report, but I can't tell you where all those places are, nor would I want to know. I think you might want to look to your state agencies that can review this and tell you whether any of it ought to be confidential. I would feel more comfortable if SHPO looked at that and decided versus the gentleman from TransCanada. Same thing with fish and wildlife issues. We have a great resource in the state in the South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Maybe they should either come before you or submit a statement as to what they consider sensitive. They need to look at these documents and give you an opinion because above and beyond the consultants the TransCanada hired, again, I think most people would look to our own people in South Dakota who are very qualified to tell you where the sensitive areas are, and I would be happy with that. And then the third item, there's an issue of time, obviously. I don't think it's good to delay your hearings. I think you need to go on with the hearings so the public can start to learn about this. You may have to have additional hearings once the data is out. But I think the real concern is that should TransCanada make the decision, I think you're better off if you can find some state or federal agency that can look at it for you and decide what should be blocked and blacked out and what should be made available. I'd feel more comfortable if it were done that way. And then as far as people looking at the information, some of it people may not even review, but it was filed, and it would seem that you should be able to release, like John said, 99.5% of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holm. Questions by commissioners? I do have one, I guess, question for Mr. Hunt. SHPO and those other agencies are involved already. There have been some studies, I believe, conducted by them. One thing I guess I'm confused as to, I'm not a big landowner or run a Webb or anything like that, but If you would know where your water sources are, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So have the, where, when you put your pipelines in, where was all of this conducted?
Very similar. Ours is a water line, of course, and theirs is petroleum product. A big difference in terms of liability. If my pipe leaks, the worst that will happen is we'll get wet and I'll have to pay crop damage to someone. If this fails, it's a bigger concern probably for a landowner. But I guess my point is, this gentleman said that a water source was a high-consequence area, and yet the information they submitted to the federal government saying we're crossing South Dakota and for the federal environmental impact statement, here's who we're going to affect, it didn't even – those water systems did not show up. So my point is that the reason the public needs to see these documents, whoever has an interest in any one of them, and I don't have an interest in all, I have an interest in some – is going to help you because they're going to point to the things that maybe got missed as much as you can legally make it available. Someone who's an avid fisherman or a hunter, which I'm a hunter, but I wouldn't call myself avid, is going to have an interest in where they're going with this. Someone who's concerned about wetlands and how many they're cutting and what that does to it is going to come in and talk to you about why they might want to see something adjusted and routed around. And if the process works, which I hope it will, you'd get all that input and you'd have a slight adjustment of where that pipe goes. And frankly, when we built 6,600 miles of water line, that's exactly what happened. Webb has the right of eminent domain and we've never used it and we live here. And the reason we didn't was because there were all the dynamics of those contacts where a landowner said, I don't want you to go here because that's where the family homestead was, or I don't want you to go there because that's a rural grave site that no one knows about. Or maybe I don't want you to go there because that's my best field. I think the public input, the question is who decides the route? Is it decided by TransCanada and they come in and decide what they share with us? Or is it a collective process where the communities out there come to their commission and say, here's what bothers me about this route. I don't care about the farmland. I'm only interested in the wetland. Maybe I don't care about the wetland. I'm more interested in the farmland. You're going to get a lot of input. And out of all of that, hopefully, the commission could set conditions on this permit that if it did pass through the state, it was done in a way that we could all live with it. And it's going to take a time. TransCanada has said in a news story they'd like to have the decision from you by September 30. I think that's pretty ambitious. It may take a bit longer than that, but the process, I didn't get to put my water line wherever I wanted to. I had to negotiate, and there's places where I went around people because they just didn't want me on their land. And we brought drinking water to the community, a benefit. This brings a benefit to the nation, but nobody in South Dakota is going to get a cheaper gas price because we put this oil line through. And if you're a landowner who'd just as soon be left alone, this is not a benefit. So I think the process, the reason that I've been adamant about documents being open is, am I going to look at every document? No. Do I have an interest in every one? No. Personally and professionally, I have interest in a number of them. But that's not to say that somebody else isn't concerned about, did they count all the sensitive areas? Do they identify all the critical fish and wildlife areas? That's not my expertise. I think the federal agencies and state agencies could tell you what's in those documents that is really confidential. I doubt that they would block much of it. I think they'd rather the people know. Frankly, I've heard from some who are concerned about where this is going in terms of wetlands and what it does to wildlife and ducks and pheasants and so forth. I think they would err on the side of more information.
All right. Thank you. Any other commissioner questions? All right. Anyone else? I'm sorry, Mr. John Smith?
I just want to note one thing, and I'm not suggesting you misspoke here, but I do note that the risk assessment and frequency studies have been released today by the company. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Yes, Ms. Anderson.
I'm Lillian Anderson. I represent a group of landowners. And as far as a landowner list, we don't need the names. What we want are land maps that are easily downloaded. I've had many people call me wanting to know where the land is, where the line is going to go, because they have received PUC letters saying that it will be within a half a mile of their residence. They want to know where this is. The landowners who are being affected, some of them know, some of them don't know. Legal description on a map that's easily downloaded would be appreciated. That way I could tell those people, either I could mail them the list or I could mail them the map. I've had people call me from Oklahoma, Texas, Illinois, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota asking me where this line is going, how they will be affected. Therefore, we think that they should have a right to know where it's going to be, and we should have the ability to go in and pick out a legal description and tell them exactly how close it'll be to their home. We also feel that the PUC has, until they've made a final decision, that TransCanada should stop trying to acquire land. It's kind of funny that they're trying to acquire land before they actually have approval. We also think that they should stop trying to threaten landowners and harassing the landowners. I have names of people from North Dakota, Nebraska, South Dakota, who feel they've been threatened and harassed by TransCanada. Thank you.
Ms. Anderson, do you think we're going to have our meetings here in the next couple of weeks. Do you think it would be helpful if maybe we should strongly suggest it to TransCanada to bring a, maybe leave their handouts, maybe some corkboard with a map of something, proposed route somewhere, or would you rather an easily downloaded file?
I can't be in peer for every meeting.
Yeah.
So easily downloaded, a lot of people have the internet. When they call me, I can say go to this site.
Okay.
And if they don't have, I'm willing to run them off and send them to them.
I was more referring to the meetings that we're going to have in Yankton, Alexandria.
Okay.
Is there anything that maybe you could suggest that TransCanada could leave, information, booklets, packets? Would you like to see that at the county courthouses? Any other information like that that would be of assistance?
Whatever will tell the people who are affected by this should have an exact place of how close it'll be to their home, whether it's a handout or whatever. At every meeting, the people should know exactly where that line is going to be, so they know exactly how they will be affected when this is over.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions?
This is John Smith, Commission Counsel here, and I'm directing this to the Deputy Executive Director, kind of catching her out of the blue here, but this map business has been of concern not just for the public out there, but our own staff has had a heck of a time with that, and it's my understanding that the administrative staff here is attempting to create some file formats that aren't so huge, are we not, so that people can, like all of us, can look at these maps without this problem. Is that, am I correct in that?
This is Heather Forney with Commission. The part of the problem that we are having is that the size of the maps are huge, and it's very hard for people to download those relatively easily. And last I knew is that we were working with TransCanada to get something out there that was easier for people to access, faster, et cetera. I don't know that it has the type of detail, though, that Ms. Anderson is looking for as far as legal descriptions and that type of thing. So,
I mean, I'm just in it. Maybe it's just something TransCanada should think about. I mean, could we have more maps that aren't so big or something like that? Again, I'm not a computer guy, but this map thing is a problem for people.
I appreciate the input. This is Brett Kennecke again, and I'm sure TransCanada does as well. Jeff Rao is here, and I'm sure people are listening online from TransCanada, and we'll certainly discuss that concern after this meeting and work diligently towards a resolution.
And this is Heather Forney again with staff. I just think one of the suggestions that I might make is smaller sections, maybe county by county or by, you know, something smaller. And then when we put those online, we can also place those, you know, map for the county of you know, whatever, so that people aren't having to download the entire file.
Thank you.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
This is Gary Hampton. I very much appreciate the comment that was made by Heather just now. I don't think that it's a matter that we want smaller maps or maps with less detail. The challenge is that the maps that were placed on the web, at least the ones that I accessed, were a series of maps, and they all had to be downloaded when you accessed the particular site. And if it were made so that instead of having a series of maps all being downloaded as one packet, if there could be a menu that would direct people to particular areas in South Dakota, then people are interested in their particular area. I'm sure some people are interested in the entire area, but they are going to access and re-access the area that is where they are living or where they have property. And so if the series can be broken up so that people can access just that particular area, it seems like the series had about five or six maps in it, it would significantly reduce the amount of data and speed up the downloading time and make it much easier for people.
Yeah, this is Jim White from Keystone. I guess what I'm hearing is the preference would be that perhaps each page of the route map book be captured as a single file with a menu then that identified the individual route maps as individual files. And I don't have the technical ability to absolutely commit to that, but can I commit that we'll take that suggestion back and try to implement it as close as possible?
Just a little clarification for people on the e-filing is new. It's new to the commission. It's kind of new to regulatory process. So some of these things probably haven't been encountered before. There's different size limitations. BIT has different size limitations. That's kind of the struggles that we're having, and that's the conversation that we're having, just in case you were wondering why we were discussing maps. It's very important, though, I feel. It's just part of the process. It's something that we need to get worked out. Any other public comment? Yes, sir. Mr. Rasmussen.
Very briefly, I guess from my standpoint looking at this, I think this got off on the wrong foot due to the fact that TransCanada said virtually everything was designated as confidential. I think that's caused certainly some distrust, and that's a problem. But under the administrative rules, the party requesting confidentiality has the burden of proving by preponderance of the evidence that the information qualifies as confidential. So I believe the commission should require TransCanada on each piece of information they want to redact or consider confidential that they explain to the commission and show why it is that's being disclosed and the nature of the information so that the public can make a determination as to whether a preponderance of the evidence has been established and whether further proceedings are necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. Any questions from commissioners? Any further comment from anyone in the audience? Back to you, Commissioner Johnson.
Yeah, thanks very much, Commissioner Colbeck. At this time, you know, let's go ahead and give Mr. Kennecke, Ms. Van Bakkeren, anybody else on staff an opportunity to respond if they wish to anything that was brought up during public comment.
This is Kara Van Bakkeren for staff. My recommendation remains regarding the information that may contain some information necessary for redaction, that we have a commitment that by Friday those documents will be redacted and staff will have, the commission will have some reasoning, commission and the public will have reasoning behind it. And from there, internally, we assess how long is necessary for the public to obtain that information, and we hold a hearing if necessary, as schedules allow.
Great. Thanks very much, Mr.
Kennecke. Thanks, Commissioner. I speak on my own behalf and that of TransCanada. We appreciate the give and take here today. It's been mostly give as to the rest of you and mostly take as to TransCanada, and I think that's just fine. We look forward to resolving this issue and to the public hearings in a couple of weeks and more give and take as we move forward through the process. Thank you very much for your patience here today. I appreciate it.
Great, thanks. At this point, let's look to any commissioner advisors, council, and see if they have anything else to add before we move toward action.
I really don't. I think I've made my comments previously. Again, I believe we should ultimately try to attain the absolute maximum level of public disclosure that we can within the limits of the law, but that we take this limited amount of time that's being requested to use caution. And I agree with Mr. Rasmussen that in the end, it's the applicant's burden to show why something should be confidential, but because we're dealing with public interest confidentiality here, not the companies, I also think we should use prudence in getting to that point. And I think the process that's been suggested here today is as good a one as I can think of to do that.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Smith. At this time, let's move toward any commissioner comments with regard to action or a commissioner motion, if they so desire.
Yes, this is Commissioner Colbeck. I just wanted to, since we have a commitment for Friday on releasing more information, I guess I would turn to maybe Mr. Hahn, Mr. Rasmussen, or even Mrs. Anderson. Since you were the ones that took the time to be here and give us the comments, would you feel it appropriate of maybe the PUC having a press release? Or I guess I'm looking for input as to how can we let people know that there is new information on the web. Would a press release be sufficient, or are you, how, what is your suggestion on how we handle that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Kurt Holm with WebWater. I think all of those avenues would be helpful. You have had people, it looks to me like from the last time I checked your list yesterday, there were like 60 to 65 people who had filed as part of your record or wrote the commission with concerns. It scattered all across the state from Nebraska to North Dakota. I think you've got emails and addresses there. I think it'd be good to let them know because they're probably leaders in their community who speak to others. I think the news media and a press release would be good. I think one issue that's on your agenda, the third item, the issue of the public hearings, which are about 13 days away, the question I suppose comes to mind is this issue of the information, does that affect whether those public meetings go on? I hope they do, because I don't think you want to delay the public meetings because of this issue. And I think at the public meetings, maybe you just convey that what you're struggling with in terms of getting the information out. This is a big project, and there's a lot of information to look at. We've never had an oil pipeline go through South Dakota. It's a big deal for us. TransCanada may do it every year, but for us it's sort of a new thing. And I think the public will be interested in knowing the efforts being made to get the information out. And I think they'd be tolerant or willing to accept it in pieces as long as the information is out before a decision is made. I mean, by you and long enough for the community to study it to see what they really think about it. So I think that's the issue. How long will people have to look at this? One thing that concerns the people I talk to, I serve farmers in my water system, and they're very frank. We have an 800 number, and they call me whenever they have a problem or question. And one thing I hear out of the Dade County area is there's a lot of concern about why TransCanada is pursuing acquisition of land when they don't have a permit from the PUC to build at all in the first place. The other is they are using, and I've heard it from people I know and respect, who tell me that they feel threatened when somebody drives in the yard at 10 in the morning and says, we want an answer by 5 o'clock, and by the way, you could be condemned and you can't beat an oil company. That's not how we do business, you know, here in. So I think one thing you may want to try to think about is how does the commission give TransCanada some advice on how you approach and court South Dakota to accept a pipeline? That's not the way to do it. And until all the information is out and people have a chance to study it and you have a chance to study that no permit will be issued, obviously, as the chairman has said in the news media. We have time to do this, and they're rushing, and I think they're making a huge mistake. I don't think they should be threatening condemnation of anybody until we know whether you're going to let them through and where.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Just one thing, eminent domain is not, that's a judicial matter and not a PUC matter. Okay, no problem. Any other, that was my only question is how we wanted to get this information out. Chairman.
If there are other commissioner questions, obviously we want to make sure they get at them. But at this point, are there any commissioner comments with regard to possible actions? If there are any, I will just note that I think Mr. Hone did a good job of trying to talk about some of the merits of having this information public. You know, I think he and I end up at the same place. I take a little bit different tack. I mean, I'm not very interested in the merits of why something should be public, because whether we can come up with a good reason as to why it should be public or not, the bottom line is it really should be public, even if it's not particularly useful, and it should be public unless there is some, as Commissioner Hansen noted, some legal reason that it needs to remain confidential. So even if a lot of this information wouldn't be helpful, I do think it's good that TransCanada has committed toward undertaking quite a process in the next few days to making as much of it available as possible. I'm not sure exactly what, commission action would be appropriate right now. We do have a commitment from TransCanada that they'll file something on Friday. That's probably significant. Probably enough at this point. I don't know. Does either commissioner feel that we need a particular motion on this item?
No, Mr. Chairman, this is Gary Hansen. No, I don't believe we need a motion. I believe I stated my intentions earlier. I do believe in the preponderance rule, and I do believe that there needs to be a statute requiring the confidentiality. Otherwise, I will not be able to support those items, and I'll just send that flag out ahead of time so that everyone working through the process will at least know where I'll be coming down. Thank you.
Yeah, in the good comments, and perhaps we could do this just so we have some commission action, and so there is some clarity for what's going to take place next. Maybe I'll move that the commission ask TransCanada that if they're unable to file to refile those documents, those confidential documents redacted, that they indicate so to the commission by a letter before Friday close of business, with explanation as to why the delay is taking place and an estimation of when those documents would be able to be refiled. Motion has been made. A second is not necessary. Any commissioner discussion on our motion?
I think that's a good idea. We need to keep this process moving and avoid as many delays as we can.
I would pause quickly to look toward TransCanada and their representation to see if they have any objection to that motion.
No, none, Commissioner. Thank you.
Great. Any objection from staff?
No, Commissioner.
Okay. Any further Commissioner comments on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Excuse me. Would you repeat? I believe I heard the motion as you intended it. Can you repeat it for me? There was a little noise in the background, just during a portion of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. That the motion by the Commission is that we instruct TransCanada to, if they're unable to file, to refile the confidential information in a new format, a redacted format, available to the public, that they indicate so to the Commission by Friday close of business why that information has not been filed, explain why it hasn't been filed, and give an estimated time when the filing would be complete from that perspective.
Thank you very much for that, Chairman Johnson. I vote yes.
Okay. And Johnson votes yes. Motion carries 3-0. I believe that resolves the first question on the agenda. I'm going to pause to see if any of the parties or the commissioners or advisors feel otherwise. Hearing nothing, we will proceed to the second question on the agenda, which deals with intervention for requesting parties. By my count, before the meeting started, we had 57 requests for intervention, requests for party status.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I think our reporter needs a short break, if that's acceptable.
No, that makes a lot of sense, and it's a great time to take a short break. John, Sherry, is it 5 minutes, 10 minutes? What's appropriate?
What do you need, Sherry? She says 5.
Okay. We will be back. Commissioner Kolbeck will turn off the Internet, and we will be in recess for somewhere between 5 to 10 minutes, and then we'll take up questions 2 and 3.
Internet's on, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
Thank you very much. We're back from our break, our 5 to 10 minute recess, which was just at 10 minutes. And now we'll address the second question on the agenda for today's meeting, which is, shall the Commission grant intervention to requested parties? Prior to the meeting today, as of yesterday, there were 53 requests for party status. I believe 4 more came in this morning, and then at least 1 came in during this meeting. I don't know how many of those we want to take. I don't know if there are any objections to any of them. I think probably the most appropriate thing to do at this point, you know, I think our standard operation would be to hear from the interveners why they're interested. I think perhaps for efficiency's sake, we'll look first to staff and then to TransCanada to see if they have any concerns about any of the requests for party status. If anybody's got any objections to the approach, let me know. Otherwise, we will turn to Ms. Van Bockert and staff.
Hearing no objections, I will go forward here. Thank you, Commissioner. This is Kara for staff. You know, looking at our statute that allows for intervention, SDCO 4941B17, and it's not an intervention statute. Rather, it designates the parties to a proceeding under this citing chapter. And it's a very broad statute. Section 3 of that lists persons residing in the area, nonprofit organizations to promote conservation, natural beauty. The very end of that list, the statute reads, or any interested person. So the statute's very, very broad, and arguably any citizen, resident, landowner of this state could certainly be interested. Drinking water, environmental concerns, you name it, the list goes on. Staff would therefore recommend that the commissioners grant intervention for all of these parties. However, staff would also recommend that those interveners be divided into two separate groups. Those interveners that own land to be affected, and those interveners that are interested simply as a resident of the state of South Dakota. And the interests represented by those two groups will be different. The testimony, evidence, discussion they provide will be different, and I believe it's important for the commission and those interveners to understand that their intervention extends to their interests.
Ms. Van Bockert, Commissioner John, well, perhaps we'll hear from TransCanada before moving in questions. TransCanada, any concerns about any requests for party status?
No. Thanks, Commissioner. Brett Kennecke again for TransCanada. Commissioners, we don't object to any of the applications for party status. We will note that the burden for becoming a party has apparently been lowered by the legislature in the form of this statute. And that I don't know whether any of the applications which were filed would have risen to the usual level that's applied in commission proceedings. We don't really know at all what interest any of these people have in this matter, but I presume under the statute and in concert with our agreement to extend the intervention deadline, it would be tremendously inconsistent to object to any of these applications on this basis. So we just please do go ahead and grant those interventions, and let's get the process continuing along. Thank you.
At this time, perhaps Commissioner or advisor questions for either staff or the applicant, and I will just ask Ms. Van Bockert, is the bifurcation you're talking about, I mean, breaking the interveners into two different groups, is that largely a cosmetic rather than a legal distinction? I mean, is that just how we will refer to them generally and how they'll be listed in categories, or will they be treated any differently with regard to this proceeding?
I think they will be treated differently, Commissioner, when providing testimony at a future date. Certainly, the commissioners have the ability to weigh the testimony and weigh the evidence provided, and the weighing of such information will depend upon that party's interest and that party's involvement in this process. So at this point, I'm sure it is largely cosmetic, and it will, however, require some weighing of testimony and information down the road as we proceed with hearings, as I see the process.
Okay. And then I have a question for either the applicant or commission staff. You know, we have had intervention requests continue to come in. Is there some point at which we will draw the line for intervention requests, you know, at yesterday close of business or noon today for today's action? And obviously, we'll have future commission meetings where presumably we would have action on other intervention requests. Or are staff and TransCanada fine with anybody who's been received, you know, even up to this very point?
Well, staff would propose that at this particular meeting, we address all of those interventions that were filed up to this meeting time. And again, that would be for efficiency's sake. TransCanada is not objecting to those, and as I indicated, the statute is very broad. Moving forward, the intervention date, of course, as you're aware, commissioners, ends July 10th, and we will, as we accumulate a second list of interveners, schedule an ad hoc meeting if necessary, and certainly address it at normally scheduled commission meetings as needed to allow intervention for those parties. Did that answer the question?
It did for me, yes. Mr. Kennedy, any comments?
No, Commissioner.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just have one question. Are they going to be separated on the internet, or is this purely in your office? Or we won't be having separate meetings for one and the other. They'll all be in the same meeting, won't they?
And certainly I think my comment was more just for clarification to those interveners. Again, I think the commissioners will have the job of weighing testimony and evidence based upon those interveners, those interveners' specific interest. So, no, there will not be separate proceedings. No, they will not be divided up in any way, but maybe it was just more of a comment than part of my recommendation.
No, I understand your reasoning. I just wanted to make sure we were clear before we went ahead with the motion. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thanks. Are there any other commissioner questions?
Not for me.
We don't have any objections to any of the interventions. Let's pause to see if anyone in attendance in peer has any objection to any of the interventions. I know they're not, you know, the people who might be doing the objections aren't party to the case, but allowing a free flow of information and participation, let's continue to pause to get their take at this time. Commissioner Colbeck, does anybody have any objections?
Any objections here in peer? I hear none.
I'm not so sure how I like the idea of having these two categories myself. To me, I kind of think if you're a party, you're a party. I think my concern, honestly, and it has nothing to do with whether or not, I think you should, there was no objection, and I personally think you ought to grant the interventions. I do see some logistical issues looming on the horizon with a very large number of parties. For those of us, I'm assuming, at least I know Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Rasmussen and people who have been through litigation before, it's tough to run things with a huge number of parties, and we're going to have some challenges. And it may be that there might be some, I don't know if classification is the right word, but I suspect there may be people who are intervening as parties who, are all of them going to want to participate, for example, in discovery? You know, I mean, those kind of issues, we're going to have some challenges in this case. Really, we are dealing with all of that we haven't had, even with a case like Big Stone where we had a whole lot of parties. We didn't have, this many, and those are going to be tough things, you know, just a matter as simple as a scheduling conference. is going to be tough to manage with that number of people. But we'll work our way through it. And there may come a time when it may be that I'm just not sure whether all of the people who are intervening as, quote, parties, I'm not sure yet at this point in time, are they all going to want to have that level of involvement? You know, that might be a legitimate question, but I don't know that we want to resolve that here today.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Stem. We'll move toward the commissioner comments and or action. And I would just note by way of comment that I think I understand what the commission staff is trying to get at. Now, I would think at this point I would just grant intervention without any particular classification. And if we could certainly, on an informal basis, deal with different types of interveners in a different way. But I think from a formal process, just have one category, and down the road, if we feel a need to subcategorize, that we could do that at that time. That would be my preference. Any other commissioner comments? Hearing none, I would make a motion to grant party status to all those that have requested, including those intervention requests that have come in today, including Seller, Liberty, Berger, and Berger, but not including Merrill Walters, an application for party status that came in after this meeting. Motion has been made. No second is required. Is there any discussion about the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
And Johnson votes aye. Motion carries. I believe that is all that we have to take care of with regard to the second question, intervention. And I would just, maybe before we move on to the third question, I would note, Mr. Smith, I think you're probably right. I think there's likely some misunderstanding about party status. I wonder if some people who want to be active participants in the public hearings at the end of the month think that they have to do one to do the other. And it's probably just a good reminder for everyone that, we are soliciting input regardless of someone's legal status in this case. Someone send us a letter, that can become part of the record. If somebody wants to make comments at a public hearing, that becomes a part of the record. One need not be a legal intervener to have your voice heard in this case. And in fact, being an intervener may end up being a burden on some people. If they're scheduling conferences that they don't really care about, but that we would ask that they would attend as once they have party status, obviously reviewing discovery, requesting discovery, making objections to evidence. It may be that is a little bit deeper legally than they want to get, but certainly I trust people look out for their own interests, and if anybody out there doesn't want to get that deep, then certainly the commission would entertain a request on their part to change their legal status. But at this point, welcome to the proceedings, everyone. The third question is, how shall the commission proceed regarding procedure at its June 25th, 26th, and 27th public meetings? And I ask that this be put on the agenda because I wanted to make sure that everybody understood sort of what our typical mode of operation is. We do everything we can to try to maximize, public input, because I do think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be interested in this proceeding. And I want to make sure that we hear from as many of them as possible. One moment, I typed up a few. I want to pull this up. My apologies for the delay, Commissioners Colbeck and Hanson. Here we go. I don't want to limit the number of people that can be allowed to speak, obviously, and I certainly don't want to put limits on how long they'll be allowed to speak, because I think we want to gather as much information as reasonably possible as a part of this proceeding. To make sure that we're able to hear from as many people as possible, I have three suggested guidelines for us to consider. First off, that individuals with short comments, less than 5 minutes long, be allowed to speak first. I'm sure we've all been at meetings where we just have 2 minutes of input to say, and we end up having to wait, you know, 2 hours to be able to make our voice heard. I think those people that have, you know, relatively short comments should be allowed to go first at a public hearing. Secondly, that articles, reports, brochures, letters, or other written information should not be read out loud into the record of meetings. Instead, I think we should ask people to submit the written information itself to the commission so that it can be made part of the official record. And obviously that would be put on the website so that it would be available to everybody in a far more user-friendly format than having to read the transcript. Of course, interested persons at the meetings would be able to make brief comments about the information that they submitted in writing. You know, in past proceedings, I think we have had people attempt to read an article that they think is relatively short, but that when you read it out loud, it takes a long time. And I actually think that's counterproductive to our interest in getting as much input as possible. So that would be my second suggestion. The third would be that interested individuals or groups not make the exact same public comments at each of the four public hearings. I do think we want to hear from as many people as possible all along the pipeline route. And if we have an individual landowner from, say, you know, Yankton County, if they make the exact same 12-minute presentation at each meeting, you know, that's frankly 36 minutes of input that could have been used for us to hear from other people to gain their input. And having it entered into the record once, I think, is really sufficient and is in the public interest. And I think if we do those three things, we will have an opportunity to hear from as many people as possible and to gain as much new information as possible about the project. And just again, a reminder, I think these suggestions are pretty consistent with how we've done business in the past. But I did want to make sure that Commissioners Hansen and Colbeck concur and that all of the parties think that will mean for smooth and you know, effective hearings. And with that, you know, I would just offer that up as suggestions, possibilities for conversation, and see if the commissioners or any of the parties have any concerns or suggested revisions. Any comments?
Yes, this is Commissioner Colbeck. I just wanted to make one comment before I believe Mr. Kennecke would like to make a comment also. And this is actually maybe directed towards Mr. Kennecke. Is there any way, I still think it might be a good idea to have pictures I know we're having trouble with the maps and things like that on the line, like as we talked before, to maybe leave at the county courthouse. Say we have a meeting in Day County, whichever. Just so that this information, if there was some request out there that someone needed information, didn't have a computer, we can say it's at the county courthouse. Is there anything like that we could do in correspondence with these meetings?
I'm sure that there is, Commissioner, and I wouldn't know what would be the roadblocks to doing that. I can't think of anything that would be that serious that we couldn't overcome, but I haven't discussed it with my client and
sure, I understand that.
Stepping out a bit on that, but I appreciate the input, and we'll consider that fully.
I just want to make sure as we go through and we make this first band of meetings and make this first swing upstate that we're not there and gone like a cloud of smoke. We want to make sure we leave behind a presence and people know where to get a hold of us, you know, where the information is that we left behind, something like that.
I think it's a good suggestion. Let's, you know, work through the different parties to see if they have any concerns with the suggestions made by me or Mr. Cole or Commissioner Colbeck. First, we'll look to the applicant. Any concerns with any of the suggestions offered up?
No, Commissioner. I have no concerns except to say that my client has been planning on putting together an introductory exposition, if you will. That's probably elevating it to two levels above what it's going to be, but we're planning on having a number of people there and having a presentation of maybe up to an hour, which is explaining the project from our viewpoint in order to give context and information to the people who are at the meeting and context to their comments. If that's not in your view of how these meetings should go, I'd like to know that.
No, Mr. Kennecke, I think you're right. I'm an error. I did not make it clear enough that, I mean, I think people are coming to these hearings for two purposes. Number one, they definitely want to know more about the project. And secondly, to the extent that they have concerns that they're beginning to form or questions they're beginning to form, they want to make those known to TransCanada, the commission staff, and the commissioners. And I think that those interests would very much be served by a presentation by TransCanada. And my comments dealt more with the public input. And we're certainly not looking to limit TransCanada nor limit anybody's amount of time to speak. You know, we just want to make sure we get great information out there. So thanks for the clarifying question.
I appreciate that, Commissioner, very much. I can't stress enough how much TransCanada looks forward to these meetings and getting to hear the input that you are going to get as well. And we are going to be ready with the presentation at all four of those meetings and look forward to the process. I don't have any comments on your other ideas. I think they're all well taken and look forward to the rest of the discussion on that.
I will look toward the staff. Do you think the staff members have any concerns or suggested improvements?
This is Kara for staff. I have no concerns regarding your recommendations. I had one other brainstorm, and that was maybe to allow the landowners the opportunity to speak first, again, along the same lines as the simple statement that individuals may want to make and not have to wait the whole meeting. I thought maybe those landowners would appreciate the opportunity to speak first as well for the same reasons.
We just granted party status to a large number of individuals and organizations. Do any of them have any concerns or comments regarding the suggestions made, the three made by myself, the one made by Commissioner Colbeck, and the one made by Ms. Van Bakker?
Yes, I believe there's someone in peer, Mr. Hone.
Yeah, go ahead, and Commissioner Colbeck, please feel free to share this portion of the meeting.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I think the Chairman's suggestion that those with shorter comments be allowed to speak first and landowners first is a good idea, and I concur. I think it also should apply to TransCanada. I've had the pleasure of seeing their presentation, their PowerPoint presentation, which I believe takes about 2 hours, not one. And I think you would get reaction from people up to this point. There have been public meetings for the last year that TransCanada has held up and down the gauntlet or the pipe route. I think if you hear from the landowners first and interested parties, TransCanada can actually be keeping a list of the number of people that have this question or that or this concern or that and pick it up at the end. If you start out with an hour, which with all due respect to my friends from TransCanada can easily turn into 2 hours, I sat at a meeting that started in Britain one evening, a public meeting. I think it was 8 o'clock. I think we got out of there at 10:30. I think it would be best to have the shorter comments up front, and probably TransCanada is going to comment at every hearing, I would imagine. I think it's going to discourage people, and you may actually have some leave. They have heard it, many of them, the presentation, and this would be the public's hearing before you to at least express their interests or concerns or support for the project. TransCanada could then have a list of questions at the end of every meeting that they could answer. And if people wanted to stay and hear that, and I'm sure they would, I think it would be more productive.
Thank you, Mr. Hone.
Commissioner Colbeck, I might have a response. You know, I think your suggestion is intriguing, Mr. Hone. I find myself being nervous about it because I believe, you know, as somebody, as a commissioner who's, you know, you've got to make some decisions at the end of this process, I think I would understand the questions and the concerns of the landowners and interested parties better after having heard what TransCanada is putting forth. Now, obviously, I'll review the information in advance, but I just wonder if we wouldn't have more effectiveness by having the presentation first so we understand what the information is before people start asking questions about it. That's sort of my counter thought, but I'm certainly still considering your suggestion.
Yes, this is Commissioner Colbeck. Maybe we could have the first 30 minutes to anyone who wants to speak with no presentations. And then after that, maybe it'd be the first 5 minutes. You know, if no one gets up, then we could proceed on. But I'm also intrigued by Mr. Holmes' suggestion, giving people someone that's coming to the meeting that's seen the presentation, they just want to say something. Maybe we do want to handle those people first. But maybe in Yankton it's the first half hour, maybe at the next plot it's the first 3 minutes because no one, maybe they're not aware of it. We could run it like that. The other thing I wanted to mention before I forget, too, is TransCanada will have land acquisition. We can't stop the – we can't get into that business, but you will definitely be explaining that process to us at those meetings.
Thanks, Commissioner Brett Kennecke. Again, that is certainly a part of the outline of the presentation that we're trying to create for these public meetings. I'm thinking that we were talking about a 45-minute presentation, trying to get it down to that sort of a level. We didn't see how half an hour would do it justice. And my recollection is that 10 minutes of it is on acquisition, but I could be wrong about that. I haven't looked at it for a few days. I've had this other matter in front of me.
Okay. Commissioner, this is Jim White from Keystone. I think our intention was to touch only very briefly on the acquisition process and to focus primarily on the issues that are jurisdictional to the commission.
This is Commissioner Johnson, and I think that's probably the better way to go. On a personal level, I'm as interested in the acquisition activity as I am anything, but on a professional level, I can only do what I can only do, and the statute's pretty clear about the things we're supposed to consider. So I think your approach, Mr. White, probably isn't the wrong one to my personal perspective, but my colleagues may have a different opinion.
Well, this is Commissioner Kobach. I would think that, I guess in my personal opinion, that's why people are coming. It deals with their land, the acquisition of their land, what their legal rights are. I would think that that's information that they would want out of this meeting. Now, obviously, I understand that we don't have jurisdiction over that, but if we're going to have a meeting, I would like to have it very useful to the people that show up. I would think that that's something very important to them.
Understand. The other concern that we have, of course, is that easement negotiation is a very personal and private and one-on-one event, and we certainly don't want to get involved in that in front of a large crowd of people. It's sort of bringing people's private business out into the public. So, again, I think we could touch briefly on the philosophy behind the acquisition program, without getting into a great deal of detail on specific acquisition.
I understand. Thank you.
I agree with my contemporary, and from the experience that I have in these type of meetings, the applicant simply needs to be prepared to answer all the questions that are asked and put to them by the landowners. That is the best way to, strictly from experience on each side of the table for myself and in every position I've ever been in, I certainly would think that you, TransCanada, understands that, and I don't think that there was any pitching intended by the comments, but it sounded for a second as if there might be, and certainly we need to have as open a forum as we can and answer, and TransCanada has to be prepared to answer all of the questions that are put to them by the landowners that are proper. Thank you.
Commissioner Kobach, are there any other public comments with regard to the suggested process for running the public hearing? So, Kim Rolla?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Can I ask one question, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, of course.
And maybe I want to might want to direct this to you, Mr. Rasmussen. Maybe, and I know you didn't say anything, but you do represent a party. Just Kurt Hone's suggestion about the order of presentation, and I guess just talking to you as an attorney, the only kind of concern I have with that is it we're going to sort of be upside down, if you know what I mean. Where, generally. Party's case in chief is sort of a tee up of the ball a little bit. And again, maybe that's purely aesthetic, and I'm just curious as to what you think. This will be the first time we've had a whole series of hearings, which makes this kind of unusual. And I was just curious as to if you had any thoughts on and whether that's going to work as well if we haven't sort of first teed up what it is we're talking about and then let everybody comment on what it is.
Well, unlike Mr. Hohen, I have not been to any of the other previous meetings, so I don't have had that experience, but I certainly appreciate what you're saying. I guess the only thing I would say is that, you know, a court can limit what is done and how things are presented, and I certainly think, you know, it might be appropriate for TransCanada to go first, but I think you should put some limitations on how long they're allowed to go, because people are going to be there and they're going to want to make comments. They're not going to want to sit there for an hour and a half or even an hour listening to a long presentation before they get to throw their two cents in, because most of the people are going to come or at least going to have some idea what this is about and don't need to hear a long presentation. They're going to have questions, and I think it's more appropriate. You know, certainly TransCanada should have an opportunity to present something, but I think the more important thing is going to be for TransCanada to answer the questions that are raised by the public.
Thank you. Pardon me for interrupting.
No, I think your question brought a pretty good answer for Mr. Rasmussen. I think there's some merit there in perhaps giving TransCanada a strong indication of how long we want their initial presentation to be. You know, when 45 minutes is the number grade. If they can't get it down shorter than that, maybe at the 45-minute point we can just pause, give the shorter commenters an opportunity to do that, and for the diehards that really want additional information, if TransCanada has 10 minutes to wrap up after that, maybe we can go back to that. Because again, I don't want to tell anybody that they don't have an opportunity to make their views known, whether it's for 2 minutes or 5 minutes or 30 minutes. But I think order is important to make sure we're respectful to all the people there.
Yes, this is Commissioner Kobach again. As it was eloquently put to me here, you can't take a test before you hear the lecture, so maybe the best is to listen to the TransCanada presentation, and then if that answers some people's questions, that would be fantastic. But again, the TransCanada presentation right away may either incite questions or answer them, so that should probably be first on the list.
Oh, that's well said. Turn at this point to any of the commission advisors to see if they have any concerns with any of the suggestions that have been offered up. I mean, at this point, I sort of see four suggestions with regard to how this should run. Shorter presenters first, or maybe there are five. Shorter presenters first, number one. Number two, that written material not be read into the record. Number three, that people don't make, other than obviously the applicant, that individuals not make the exact same public comments at each of the four hearings. That landowners also be afforded an opportunity to go earlier than perhaps other interested individuals. And, you know, finally, that the TransCanada presentation be, that they make every effort to be in that 45-minute region so that we can make sure that we don't have people have to dash out before we get into the questions and answers. Advisors, any concerns with those five recommendations?
I don't. I just might note, because you're not here in the room, Mr. Chairman, Mrs. Anderson, it just looks to me like you might want to weigh in. I've noticed your facial expressions, and this is your time to do that. So I wouldn't sit there and be bashful if you have something to say. Is that okay, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I noticed that it looked like you had some concerns.
I also have set to their presentation. It's very one-sided. It's very, very much TransCanada. If I go to a meeting and I'm going there to testify and you're going to force me to sit for 45 minutes, let alone drag in a husband who's a farmer who's not going to sit anywhere for 45 minutes, there's going to be people leave. My suggestion would be at least you give people forewarning that there's going to be extra minutes of TransCanada with their whatever. If they want to come and listen to that, that's their prerogative. If they don't want to, then they may come in the door later and not have to listen to it. Because people that, you know, if they've seen it and heard it, you don't want 45 minutes more of it.
Thanks for the suggestion, Ms. Anderson. I would have a question for Ms. Forney. Ms. concerns with maybe making a second notice to that effect in newspapers?
We'll have Mr. Smith answer that.
Heather actually, I don't know, something was going on here, and she was up here, and she just walked out about 3 minutes before you asked her that.
Sure.
She may be listening downstairs and could get back up here. I mean, obviously, we're getting, you know, we can send out another notice, or maybe we could do it via just, I know we got Mr. Mercer in the back there. I mean, if the media would want to help us out, maybe we could do it via press release or something. I noticed Kurt Hone now has a comment too. And one other thing to note, of course, we haven't heard the presentation, you know, obviously. And so at least at one of the meetings, and we don't know how many other, I mean, we've really gotten a lot more publicity out on that. We have no idea how many hundreds, maybe thousands of people out there, we don't know, haven't heard it, Ms. Anderson. We haven't heard it. We don't know what it is yet. So at least once, of course, we want to hear it because it's also a point of view that we need to hear. You know, they are the applicants. So at some point, we want to hear it. I think we're just talking now mechanically, how do we do this so it's fair and not oppressive to people. I don't know, Kara, what do you think in terms of re-noticing it? Heather must have been listening. Here she is again.
I'm sorry, I missed the question. I was downstairs trying to process payroll. So,
well, this is Commissioner Johnson. You know, it's been suggested that perhaps if we're going to have TransCanada give a 45-minute presentation, that we let people know that in advance. In these sort of citing cases, we've always had the applicant provide a presentation first for exactly the reasons Commissioner Kolbeck has mentioned. It generally sparks a lot of questions in people's mind, and it answers a lot of questions. I mean, it sort of sparks more knowledgeable questions, and it answers some of the initial baseline questions. But, Ms. Anderson made the suggestion that we let people know if we're going to do that. Are there logistical concerns, Ms. Forney, to re-noticing our meeting?
This is Heather Forney for staff. Part of the problem that we might run into with re-noticing is that some of the papers that we notice in are weeklies, and we may miss publication deadlines, et cetera. I might suggest that we go the route of something more like a press release or something to that effect. It's a lot more timely. People will get the information more quickly. And not everybody reads those public notices as much as we would hope that they would. So I might just suggest something like a press release, letting people know the format of the public meeting, that we will start with approximately a 45-minute presentation by the applicant, followed by a question and answer.
Thanks very much. That's not a bad suggestion. Mr. Smith, did you mention Mr. Hone had comments you wanted to make?
It appeared that way. Again, Kurt, comment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I think if there's restraint shown by TransCanada, I mean, if the PowerPoint presentation I saw were given, it was 2 hours, and it sort of starts out with, and then God created oil. And it's probably more than we wanted to know. There are a lot of things we know. We know about the Mideast problem. We know about energy independence. If they focus it on what's relevant, it's the land issues. It's the location of the oil. It's issues like, what about the pressure and how high it, if there's a leak? It's those kinds of issues. We all know the international issues. We don't need to hear that. And I think if it starts out that way, the one I've seen several times, they're going to gobble up a lot of time. Some of your hearings start at 7 p.m. And, everybody probably wants to get out of there at some reasonable time. So I just think that it's a matter of restraint. I think what they need to convey initially, the outline of this plan, and they're going to be conveying to you probably in this chamber at some point down the road in more greater detail, but they're going to convey a general outline of a project, 30 minutes, and then the public comments, you're going to get reaction from people from that, and then they ought to maybe have a closing comment that, here's some of the things we've heard, and here's some answers. We don't really need to hear about what's happening in Nigeria, on the oil issues or whatever. it's more a matter of what's happening right here within the state. And I think that's they tell you how big a company they are and how small you are, and they go through these things. If that's the case, you'll get another reaction at your hearing. I don't think you want. I think what you want is a precise clinical explanation of what they're going to do. And then the public will react to what they know about it, and there'll be questions, and hopefully they'll be able to answer them right there or follow up. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe we're being too skeptical. I sat through it a couple times, and I probably don't have the frustration that Lillian does, but it's a bit long. I think what you're going to hear from landowners, they may repeat themselves, but I think whether you're at Yankton or Clark or whatever, but I think you're going to get the gist of the initial reaction. And then it may give you something as to what you want to pursue or what you want to see, what conditions you might want to place on a permit approval for the company. So I would hope the majority of the time is spent getting public input, and I'm going to wait to the very end at every one of them so I'm not dominating.
Comments.
Mr. Koenig, you would like to make a comment.
I would. Thank you, Commissioners. I'll be brief. I'm going to make a couple of comments. One is I think it's unreasonable for a TransCanada as the applicant to somehow be expected to sit there and wait until the end and not give those people who haven't, you know, an hour and a half ago we were hearing that nobody knew what was going on with the pipeline, and now we're hearing that everybody's been to our presentation, and I suspect the truth is somewhere in the middle. But we really do insist that you give us a time limit. You know, you've imposed not really a time limit, but a guideline on other people. We'll take that and we'll work with that. That's quite all right. But I think to not allow us to go first and make a presentation and give context to the people who are hearing it for the first time is a big mistake. I really do. The second comment that I'd like to make, and this goes back to Commissioner Hansen's comments of quite some time ago, actually now. These are public hearings for the commission to get input from people, and they're not public inquisitions of my client, TransCanada. That said, we intend to be able to answer people's questions at all of the meetings, and in a lot of cases, it's not going to be to anyone's satisfaction. There are going to be rhetorical questions posed. There are going to be questions posed that don't have answers, and I want to make it abundantly clear that these are public hearings so the commission gets input and not public inquisitions of TransCanada. And to the extent people might get that impression, I'd hope to re-educate them that really this is their chance to tell you three what they think about the project and the siting of it, and not a chance to somehow put TransCanada on public display and ask questions in order to make political points or otherwise. So thank you very much.
That's very well said, Mr. Koenigke.
Mr. Kolbeck, if I could at this point, this is Gary Hansen. I appreciate very much Mr. Koenigke's statement clarification just now. There was a statement by Mr. White that was in reply to a statement pertaining to presentation, and I just wanted to make certain that they were open, completely open, answering the questions that were put before them. I believe this reply caused me some concern, and that's what I was expressing, nothing that Mr. Koenigke had said up to that point. Thank you, Mr. Kolbeck.
Any other, we'll look to commissioner comments or commissioner advisor comments or questions.
Yes, we do have Mr. Rizloff would like to address us.
Mr. Rizloff, please.
This is Greg Ristlin speaking. The one thing I think it's important to remember, I think we do need to have input of those interested parties when they show up at the meeting, but we've been talking all afternoon about providing information and full opportunities for those to participate and receive all the information they need. I think that's it took up the first hour of the day. I think when you go out in public, you can't assume that everyone has done a long study of what TransCanada intends to do. And it seems to me that there will be some showing up for the first time, and they will need some context for that meeting. Now, with that said, Mr. Hone's comments were, I think, very good as far as the content of what needed to be presented at those meetings. But I certainly think we can't assume everybody who walks into that meeting room is a second-year student on this particular project. I think we have to assume some are freshmen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rizloff. Other commissioner or advisor comments?
Yes, there's actually Mr. Smith would like to address us, and then also I just wanted to make the comment that there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 landowners, and we, like Mr. Brislav had just stated, that we cannot take for granted that they know anything about TransCanada. We need to start from zero.
Okay, Mr. Smith, go ahead.
Oh, this is going to be real short. I'm just, again, picking up on Mr. Kennecke's comment about the nature of these hearings. Again, just and I don't know who's listening in out there in the Internet, and there's a few people here in the crowd, but just to let people know, these public input hearings are the first step. It really is truly the first step in this process. It's not the end of the line. We now have interveners in the case. If the interveners' concerns are not resolved through either reaching a satisfaction through discovery or whatever, or through stipulations with the company, which happens a lot. That frequently is the way these get resolved, is interveners get their concerns resolved and they're resolved through agreement. Ultimately, we're going to wind up in a formal case. We are talking something not, hopefully not an inquisition in the Middle Ages context, but that will be a formal proceeding where the company, where the interveners in the case and their lawyers will have the opportunity to put the company through the paces and vice versa. And everyone will have the opportunity to put on evidence and probably more importantly, to subject the other party, including the applicant's evidence, to as vigorous a cross-examination as you want to undertake. And so I just wanted to make that clear that this is really, these your initial public hearings are more, they're informative, they're like scoping meetings, but it's nowhere near. That decision doesn't get made after this first round of four hearings. This is just the start. And sometimes these go on a long time. So just to let everybody know that. Thank you.
I think we've got some suggestions before us. I think we've reiterated them. I'll go through them again quickly. Short comments go first. Articles, other written material should not be read for the record at the public hearing. That repetitive comments by the same individual at multiple meetings should not happen. That landowners will be afforded an opportunity to go earlier than some others. And that the TransCanada presentation is somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 minutes, up to an hour, no longer than an hour. If those are the five proposals, do Commissioners Hansen or Colbeck have any concerns about those or any comments about those?
No, Dusty, I think that's a very good start.
Okay. Craig, we'll presume that motion has been made then. Second, is it necessary? Any discussion on that motion? Any further discussion on the motion?
Should be standard operating procedure of the probably look towards adopting those on all of our processes.
That is a pretty good idea, so that we don't do this on an ad hoc basis. Rather have something people can refer to even in advance. That's a really good idea. Any other comments? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson, both aye. The motion carries. Any further business to come before the commission today? I think we have handled our third question satisfactorily. Anybody?
Mr. Chairman, might I? This is John Smith again.
Please.
Just following up on Commissioner Colbeck's suggestion about the filing of maps, et cetera, at the county. Ms. Van Bakkern, it's my understanding, I mean, we are required by law, and again, I think it's Section 15 of the Siting Act, to file the, quote, application at the auditor's office. I'm assuming we've done that.
We, as per agreement with TransCanada, they sent those applications directly from their office, so we knew it would be accurate, and we weren't making copies of copies. So, as I understand, the auditor's office have all those copies, and of course they'll need to be supplemented now as information.
As additional information that we've done here today is made public, then that will also be, those records will be augmented.
Yes, and staff will communicate with TransCanada to understand whether that comes from our office Or if it comes from TransCanada's office.
And let me ask you this, and again, I know you filed that in disk form, Brett, but I think we'll have to get paper materials that are fileable in the auditor's offices so the public has that. And maybe the map issue will resolve itself, but if I understood Commissioner Kolbeck's suggestion, and maybe the company could just do this, is that we get maps at least for that particular county that are clear and easy to comprehend for the public and are precise enough for them to be able to clearly see pipeline locations, et cetera. Is that fair? Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
Yeah, no, good point to follow up on Commissioner Kolbeck, good suggestion. And I might just, you know, we had asked for, or rather we moved and passed the motion asking TransCanada to file a letter with the commission by Friday if they weren't able to supplement their filing. I might just ask the same thing of staff. You know, staff may have commitment to work as quickly as possible to get the documents that we released from confidential treatment today. If that can't be done by Friday, if the commission staff could also file a letter with the commission indicating when they expect that process would be done and what was causing the holdup. And I don't think we need a formal motion. That would just be a request I would make of Ms. Van Bakker, Mr. Cannell, Mr. Solomon, everybody else on staff there.
Yes, staff will submit such a letter. Thank you.
Commissioners Hansen, Kolbeck, anything else?
Nothing from me.
Great. With that, then we will stand adjourned. Thanks very much to the applicants, all the interveners, and to Commissioner Staff.
Thank you.